analog.
Genetic diversity is real. Just look at the equator. Those who are near to it, well, they had some microevolution going on to give them darker skin. But those who are farther away have lighter skin, enabling them to soak up that vitamin D better than ever before. And you look at somebody like Usain Bolt, I mean, it's pretty clear that there's something going on under the hood there. And that doesn't mean that he's impressing anybody or oppressing them either. At the end of the day, genetic diversity is a legitimate fact. It is out there. It is real. And you know what? No matter what your makeup is, we want everyone, at the very least, to have the Baptist bias.
Thanks for joining us on The Baptist Bias. I'm your host, Pastor Shelley. I'm excited to talk about this issue when it comes to racism, genetics, the race mixing, interracial marriage. This is such a controversial topic for some reason. And it seems like ever more online is constantly talking about this. You have people like Nick Fuentes that openly declare, hey, I'm a racist. Recently went on the Piers Morgan show, got several million views already. There's racist memes being just shared everywhere on X, TikTok, Instagram, Gab, of course. That is a hotspot for racist memes and content and material. And, you know, me personally, I've always just kind of thought it's like kind of a fun thing to just kind of make jokes and take lightly. But a lot of people are taking it pretty serious these days. You see a rise in support for people like Hitler, people like Joseph Stalin. Nick Fuentes saying that they're cool, saying that he's fans of them. Lots of people sharing speeches of Hitler, bringing back just ideas of eugenics and things like this. And, you know, from my perspective, I think it's important to address some of these issues and talk about uncomfortable subjects and topics and to address some of the, quote, elephants in the room, even if they are unpopular. And, you know, at the end of the day, we need to believe what the Bible says on these issues, even if it is not the coolest thing to say, even if it's not the, quote, most based. Because at the end of the day, we should care more about what's true than having some popular opinion. But I'm got a great panel today because I have my co-host, Ben the Baptist, and we're also bringing another guest. And they don't necessarily agree with me on everything on this issue. But I'm glad to have them on here to challenge me. And I kind of want to share a lot of information tonight. But Ben, how's it going? Are you excited for the show?
Yeah, I am. I think there's going to be some interesting topics that are brought up here tonight, and I'll be monitoring the chat as well. So be sure to participate in that. If you have any good questions that you want to ask, you know, I'll try to interject and get your question on the air. Looking forward to it tonight. I think it should be a good one.
Yeah. And of course, you know, just of course preferences, you know, as a Baptist, you know, I don't think that there's actually a master race out there. I don't consider myself a racist person. At the end of the day, though, we don't want to just ignore patterns that we see in this world. We don't want to just get rid of all intuition that God has given us. Obviously, there is racial diversities. There are things that we see and experience in our world. Obviously, there's problems. There's a major immigration issue that's happening in America. So, you know, we want to deal with those issues. But at the same time, we can still love all people and want them to all be saved. And so we kind of have to balance these two ideas. Now, since we're talking about genetics and stuff, there really isn't somebody that I thought could be a better person to bring on than Pastor Steven Anderson. He has 18 degrees, not all in biology, but one of them is in biology. He knows the Bible really well. And we've had a lot of conversations on this subject. I don't even think we necessarily always agree exactly on every nuance, but you know, he's definitely an intelligent mind when it comes to the subject, and I'm glad to bring him on here to challenge our viewpoint. How's it going, Pastor Anderson?
It's going great. I really appreciate you having me on. I've always loved the subject of genetics. I remember even just when I was a kid, my mom like breaking down to me the basics of genetics at the breakfast nook. And we were kind of, you know, doing the squares with the different, you know, dominant, recessive, and she was showing us all that. And then obviously later in life, I did a much deeper dive into genetics. I studied it academically. And I think it's just a really cool subject, super interesting. And so I'm looking forward to the conversation because there's a lot of different ways that we could go with this conversation. So
I want to pull up lots of things on the screen. I don't know if we can go to one of my first images, number one. I kind of want to just give a quick just kind of view of where I'm coming from on this discussion and kind of my just general viewpoint. And then I think we can branch out from that. But my kind of viewpoint is that genetically speaking, we're kind of like Mario Kart. I know I like to simplify things down and just kind of dumb things down or use like car illustrations. But again, I don't know if we can put these put our images on the screen or not. But I want to try and go through some of those first few images if we can. But again, when you're playing the game Mario Kart, and I don't know if anybody's played this or not before, but you have several different characters you can choose from, and they all have varying degrees of abilities. But at the end of the day, when it comes to their abilities, it's not like one player is just better than all the others, because if they were, everybody would just pick that player. It's that it's kind of just based on your preference and your style and what it is that you want. So you pick Mario. He's kind of a well-rounded guy. You got Toad. He's kind of like shorter, smaller. He's quicker and faster, but, he can't stand to as much scrutiny if he gets hit. He's not as durable. You got Bowser, who's big, he's durable, but he's maybe not as quick, his maneuvering. And I think even sometimes it's acceleration versus the top speed. So you got all these variables there, but they kind of even them out. We all got tokens and we can put them in the bucket, but we can't necessarily, just say hey, one player is better than the others. I'm kind of curious, what do you guys think about that?
Well, I would say, first of all, that, even if we weren't talking about race, what you just said would be true, because even just amongst white people, you're going to have some people that are going to be more naturally athletic. You're going to have people that are more intellectual. You're going to have people that are good at one thing, bad at another. Or even if we just stayed within one race, whether it's white, black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever. And so, the way I look at life is, instead of sitting around and thinking about one person being better than another or superior than another, we just need to realize that we've all been dealt a certain hand. There are certain things that we're going to be good at, not good at, certain tendencies. And, I think God just expects us to do the best we can with what we've got, So if someone is a low IQ person, it doesn't mean that they can't still study and work hard and get smarter and actually, learn things. And just because someone maybe has, a high IQ or just genetic advantage in that area, it doesn't mean that they're going to be a smart person at the end of the day, because if they just waste their brain on drugs and alcohol and don't spend any time hitting the books or just constantly rotting their brain on TV and video games, obviously that person's not going to be smart. So, I think that there's too much emphasis sometimes placed on IQ. Because the way I think about it is it's sort of like a computer, and the IQ is like the hardware, right? But what really matters is what software are you running on that machine? What are you doing with that machine? And it's sort of like cameras too. If you think about a video camera that can film at 1080p or something, right? But then it's out of focus. It's going to look like crap. It doesn't matter if it's 1080 because it's not focused right. I'd rather have 360p, but it's actually in focus and being handled by a professional cameraman. So in my opinion, it's more important what you do with the hardware that you're given.
I like those analogies. And I think also a gun or something, you could talk about a gun has a certain magazine for capacity, how many rounds it has, what type of rounds it has, maybe exactly how hard or how fast the bullets can be shot and things like that. But, there's a lot more to just, the gun than just those specific details, because if you're good at using the gun, that's more important than necessarily the exact caliber perhaps, or how many rounds you have and things like that. I do believe that from a hardware perspective or a gun or these different things, there are predispositions in our genetics of IQ. And I know I've talked with you, Ben, a little bit about this. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but in prior conversations, you kind of felt like IQ was limited to a cultural impact, maybe not a biological impact. I'm kind of curious, do you still kind of lean into that, or what is your view on IQ here?
Well, I would say the part of the argument that I was taking issue with was more so the racial component. Like, the idea that if you have a certain skin color, you're just genetically predisposed to be dumber or smarter. And like, I get it. You know, you could argue my reputation mostly comes down to, come on, man. But I just feel like there's more of a cultural element there when it comes to skin color than there is a genetic element. If we're talking about intelligence specifically.
Yeah, but I just want to ask, like, do you believe that some people have a higher IQ than others from a genetic perspective only, from a biological perspective only, or do you think it's only cultural?
I think that in general, there probably is a link in terms of like your natural capacity to be an intelligent person, meaning that, yeah, I'm sure some people probably have a higher IQ than others, but like what you guys have talked about though, what really matters is the quote unquote software that you're downloading onto that hardware. So while there may be different caps, as it were, I don't think though that those are necessarily related to race. Though I don't think that the IQ level is
related. I'm not talking about race now. I'm just saying in general. Do you think some people have a higher IQ than others?
The answer to that, yes, yeah, no? The answer to that is yes, especially when you look at the fact that there's different abnormalities out there, whether it's those who are more, you know, mentally handicapped versus like super geniuses, and those obviously have to do with their genetics.
Yeah, obviously from an IQ perspective, even if you had a great genetics, if you are never taught, you never read, you never learn, like you're probably not going to realize your full potential of your biological IQ. So I get that. Same with athleticism, right? You could be super athletic from a genetic perspective, but you never practice shooting or dribbling or passing or throwing or skating or any of those things, and you're not going to reach your full potential. But I guess the argument is like some people, and again, we're just throwing out numbers. Some people may only ever get to like 100 IQ as their full potential. Whereas others maybe could reach 120 or 130 or 150 as their full potential if they put in the same level of effort, energy. At least that's my perspective of how those things could or could not work. But just your biology is kind of like this picture in Mario Kart. Like Mario has a certain biology here, and based on that, he has certain attributes or traits. I think if you go to the number three, image three. Oh, yeah, go to two is fine. Two is good. It's bigger to speak. See, Wario here has a certain, like, tokens in these buckets, right? Like, and it's almost like everybody in the characters of this Mario Kart, they only get certain amount of tokens. Like if you added up all the amounts here, it would be pretty much equivalent for all players. It's just which buckets are these things being put into? And just my viewpoint and kind of just understanding how, you know, we look at the world from general populations, general groups of people, that people have tokens in different buckets here. And so that's what I'm going to try and prove tonight, is just like where I see that there's some buckets that general populations have. But at the end of the day, that no one ends up being a master race. And I think that's important because when you think about Hitler ideology, evolutionary thinking, like they genuinely believed that some groups of people were more evolved and just that they basically had more tokens in overall. Like if you just added up their entire score, this general population is just better in every category. And I don't believe that. So I think it's important for a couple reasons. Number one, then everybody's unique and everybody's special in some ways, right? Because yeah, maybe there's a trade-off. Like I didn't get as much height, but maybe I got more intelligence, or right, maybe I didn't get as much eye-hand coordination, but I have another trade-off. Like there's going to be trade-offs to your height, weight, size, beauty, intelligence, athleticism. Like, you know, and again, there's some people that are going to be genetic lottery winners, and there's going to be some people that are genetic lottery losers as an individual. But as general populations are considered, you know, there's typically like common patterns. And then again, even from a spiritual perspective, which we can go there too, you could be a genetic lottery winner. Like let's just say Tom Brady or somebody, or someone that's like a super athlete. They might be a genetic lottery winner from the fact that they're maybe smart, tall, athletic. And you could look at someone that's not tall, not very smart, not very athletic. But then it's like, what are the likelihood of those people getting saved? You know, like what's the likelihood of someone like Tom Brady being so wealthy and prideful and having all these things end up accepting the gospel of Jesus Christ and getting saved And then the person that is a lot more humble in life, like, what's his chance? You know, you got Lazarus the beggar, who basically kind of has like a rough life, like a horrible life. And then you have the rich man that fared sumptuously. And you could argue, hey, this guy had a way better life, but hey, he ended up not getting saved and went to hell. This beggar had a rough life, ends up getting saved, going to heaven. You got the guy that was born blind and then later in life gets healed. He obviously got saved. Would have been better to have been born having your eyesight and having, you know, done great accolades through having vision and then going to hell versus the guy that was born blind and had to live a long portion of his life blind.
Right.
And then he ends up getting saved. Like, so I think that there's a lot of things here that even if you could argue somebody is genetically superior than another individual, doesn't even mean it's necessarily even better in the grand scheme of salvific perspective, right? So, you know, there's a lot to unpack here, but I'm just kind of curious from your perspective, Pastor Anderson, do you feel like there's kind of trade-offs genetically that when you look at just general populations, that even if one population is kind of favored in one category, there's kind of trade-offs and it seems like nobody kind of gets it all?
Yeah, obviously different people adapted different strengths and it's definitely based on geography. But at the same time, here's kind of the problem. But before we go further, I just want to give kind of the problem that I have philosophically with this conversation in general is that like when we talk about, okay, this group of people is higher IQ than this group of people or something like that. And obviously anybody wants to could just go on Google and just search for a map of like the average IQ in countries across the world. And you're going to see just dramatic differences in the average IQ based on geography. But the problem that I have with that is that I don't really see the benefit in telling people this. Because like if you tell someone, oh, you have this high IQ, you're so smart, then it could just make that person become arrogant and prideful and think that they're better and maybe slack off and not really even, you know, work to their potential mentally. And then if you tell someone else that they're, oh, you're dumb, you're low IQ, you're never going to be an intellectual, just focus on working with your hands. So then the problem with that is then it becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy, like, oh, well, I'm not smart or something, you know? When in reality, I think that it's better just if we didn't know our IQ. Like, I don't even want to take an IQ test. I don't even want to know, because if it came back high, then I would just be prideful. If it came back low, then I would just maybe, you know, think that I can't do things and it might hold me back just because it'd be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, why don't we all just kind of do the best with what we got and just try to be as smart as we can, try to be as athletic as we can. And
well,
you know, most of
I want to push back. I want to push back on that. So anyway, here's a couple pushbacks I would have on this. Number one is, you know, I think IQ should have some benefit to the society in the context of like, hey, maybe you're in school and they're just testing the general IQ and they're saying, hey, these people that have higher IQs, y'all should maybe lean into some of these professions that really leans into, you know, whether that be computer science or technology or, you know, being maybe a pilot or different jobs where IQ actually has a significant impact. And it's not necessarily to like degrade people that have lower IQs. It's just simply saying like, we're trying to challenge the people that do have good IQs. If they don't want to know, they don't have to know, but I'm just saying, hey, I kind of want to know what my capabilities are and then try to push those people to excel and to fill their bucket. But here's the thing. Everybody should seek as much wisdom as they possibly can and gain as much knowledge, no matter what their IQ level is. And at the end of the day, like by knowing that information, I think you could then challenge the people that maybe are on the high point of the scale to take that knowledge and use it, you know, for their advantage. Or again, if there's people that, what if I just said, you know what, I just really want to be a rocket scientist or something. And then it's like, well, unfortunately, you know, I don't really necessarily have the biological equipment to do so. You know, could it be misleading to like encourage people to go down that route? Or through diversity hires like DEI type measures, try to put people in positions that they're not going to necessarily be able to be qualified for. Same would be with anything. What if I just said like, hey dad, I want to play in the NBA and be a center in the NBA. And as a child, I'm not like realizing like, hey, you're just not going to biologically ever meet the qualifications to be a center for the NBA. So it's kind of silly for me to just sit here and play basketball all day, every day of my life.
No, I see what you're saying.
I see what you're saying
as far as like, oh, you know, you don't want to invest all this time toward doing this, you know, really intellectual career path if there's no way you're going to make it. But, you know, I would say to that, you know, you're going to figure that out along the way anyway, because eventually the classes are going to get too hard. And what I would say is that it's really no harm, no foul. If let's say you're just kind of a middle of the road guy of intelligence and you're trying to go down these really difficult paths of astrophysics or something, you know what I mean? And then, you know, you realize along the way, this is a little too hard. Then, you know, you just change your career path at that point. You just change majors. Everybody changes their major. Everybody changes their career probably at some point. And I'm a strong believer in working on your weaknesses. Like, I want to be a well-rounded person, and everybody likes to just work on their strengths. You know, I like to work on my weaknesses so that I can be balanced and a well-rounded individual. And so this thing of like, oh, well, here's what you're good at, so put all your time and energy and effort into that. That's not really the way that I live my life, and that's not really the way I encourage other people to live their lives. I would say if somebody, you know, spends a bunch of time practicing sports and it turns out they're not that athletic, it probably didn't hurt them to get out there and do a bunch of sports and work on that weakness. That you probably, at the end of the day, you're going to be a well-rounded individual, and everybody's eventually going to find their niche. But I don't want to be in like some totalitarian, and I know this isn't what you're saying, but I don't want to
I know what you're going with. China is going to say, hey, you should go down this road path because of your predisposition. And I'm saying there's probably some balance there.
Dystopia where it's like, oh, you failed this test, so now you have to go into this blue collar thing, or you have to go in, or you're smart, so you can't do blue collar work, even if you like it. We need you to be some kind of a, you know, scientist or whatever. Like, to me, I think that people should just get out there, try everything, work hard.
Yeah, but what's something that you're athletic, you said weaknesses? What are you weak in? What's an example?
Like, what's that?
What's an example of one of your weaknesses? Like, I don't know. I don't want to suggest. I'm just saying, like, from your own perspective, like, what's something you say you're kind of weak in, or you're not as good at, or you feel like you...
This is like a job interview.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he works too hard.
My weakness is I work too much. I study too much.
I would say that sometimes my weakness is laziness. That's probably something that all men deal with at some
point. Yeah, but I'm more like saying, like, let's just pick an activity or an item, like... ice skating, basketball, or chess, or like, I mean, I'm just saying, like, throwing something out there. Like, you feel like you're not.
I would say that I am not predispositioned to be very athletic. So I've always.
But what if I said quit pastoring because you're good at that and just try to become a professional athlete? That kind of seems like nonsensical when you're so good at that. So it's just like, if someone's really good with their hands, and it's like, hey, we're trying to guide you towards, you know, using your hands in employment, maybe being someone that is a welder or someone that's an artist or someone that uses, like, you have this skill in art or music or welding or hands. Like, it doesn't make sense to then force them to be like a STEM major and try to become a bioengineer.
Yeah, but this is,
it's like,
I feel like this is a straw man though. Here's what I'm saying. Okay. What I'm saying is that let's say, you know, you say, oh, this particular race tends to have a lower IQ, you know, well, there are going to be exceptions to that, number one. And so I don't want to just say to a person, oh, you're such and such the race, so you should do this job that's for people of lower intelligence or something, and you should stay in your lane, and you should do this. I think every individual should be able to figure that out for themselves and should be able to try things and do whatever they want. And just have the freedom and not be told by other people what they can and can't accomplish. You know, here's the thing. Maybe there are some people of middling intelligence, though, that they're going to work really hard and do one of these high-end cerebral jobs just because they work their butt off, and maybe they can do it and get it done and whatever. I'm just saying, you know, people should be allowed to do what they want. And I don't think it's profitable to start labeling people and saying, oh, you're black, so, you know, you're good at sports, or you're not as intelligent, or oh, you're Asian, so you must be super academic. You must be a martial artist or something, or, you know, oh, you know, white men can't jump or whatever. Like, I'm just saying, like, I don't think that is helpful, like, especially as preachers, You know, I feel like my job as a preacher is to just try to lift people up and to try to get people to be their best version of themselves physically, mentally, and spiritually.
Well, I don't think anybody should just allow a stereotype to define who they are. So
yeah, I'm not going to tell people, I'm not going to tell a dumb person, hey, go do this really cerebral job. And I'm not going to tell some out of shape person, hey, you're going to the Olympics. I'm not talking about lying to people. That's kind of a straw man. What I'm talking about is just saying, hey, if you're bad at athletics, that's the more reason to spend more time playing sports so that you can stop being such an uncoordinated spaz. You know,
well, and, again, and if you're, yeah, there's a layer of truth to what you're saying.
Spend more time reading and studying.
I feel like so we're a little ahead of ourselves in the conversation.
We just keep wanting to go to race.
So let's slow down to speed up here. I want to go to image 9 for a second because I want to talk about skin color since it's been brought up multiple times. I haven't brought it up, but you guys keep bringing it up.
All right.
And here's the thing.
It's literally in the name of the broadcast.
Yeah. Okay.
Literally name.
That's fair. But here's the thing, like my viewpoint on skin color is kind of just what, you know, Grok and everybody else will say, like the reason why some people have different color skin is mostly based on geography. You know, if you just look at a map, this is just showing a map of skin color based on geography. And that's pretty much just what we observe. People from certain areas have darker skin and it seems like it has a relation to proximity to the equator. Now, again, since there's been in the last 100 years or so, especially a lot of just mixing, technology, just all kinds of travel and stuff like that, there's definitely areas that have had much more mixing, you know, in the last several, you know, maybe 100 years or so. But especially prior to that, you know, this chart's just generally accurate as far as just like what we kind of observe in the world when it comes to skin color. And I don't believe that skin color is something that makes people like a different group of people or something like that. You know, the Bible says that we're made of one blood. And I think that, you know, just looking at this chart could sometimes maybe unwind people's imagination when it comes to evolutionary thinking, when it comes to history, when it comes to Charles Darwin's viewpoints. Because specifically, if you go to the British Museum today and you go to other exhibits, they will have skulls all lined up and they'll even show skulls from Australia and say these people are less evolved and blah, blah, blah. And some people still today, I see at least online saying, oh, black people are less evolved or black people are not the same type of human or not the same classification or whatever. And it's like the reason why their skin's black is just, hey, they lived in an area where being darker skinned was more advantageous and people have lighter skin lived in an area where having lighter skin was more advantageous. And through the just process of natural selection, skin colors adapt. Obviously, when you have the same group of people kind of mingling and mating for hundreds of years, they're all going to kind of blend and tend to just have a certain, you know, characteristic or trait. But skin color doesn't really mean anything. It's not inherent. I don't believe that there's a one for one skin color with any other attribute, but I do think that just generally speaking, we can kind of see these things. You know, the Bible says about the Ethiopian, can the Ethiopian change his skin? And I would suggest that the reason why that's brought up in the text is because Ethiopians were dark-skinned in the Bible because of their proximity to the equator, and that we still see that today, that people that are in that part or that region of the world have darker skin, and that's just never going to really change. That the geography of this world kind of just draws out certain human characteristics and traits. And so people are going to have these kind of skin colors in these areas given enough time. And that's just the reality of the situation. I'm kind of curious, Ben, do you feel like you would argue with this chart or would you argue with this picture?
No, there's nothing that I see. I mean, it's just talking about the different physical characteristics that people have based on their geography. So I don't really see anything that I could gainsay personally.
What about you, Pastor Anderson?
No, I mean, obviously this is just, it's just factual that obviously people are darker at the equator. But one thing that I want to mention though, is that the forces of natural selection that led to these changes in humans where you have the lighter skin in the northern regions and the darker skin around the equator though, I would say that those forces are probably no longer at work in 2025. because in order for those things to be happening, you have to have a lot of people dying, you know? So if we're in a situation where we have all this technology and we have all this really nutritious food and we have climate controlled houses, then, you know, natural selection is not going to work because there's no survival of the fittest if everybody's surviving. You know what I mean? Because we're all surviving. We're all getting fed. It doesn't matter if you're black as the night or, you know, just super pale, super white skinned. Like, you can easily survive in any of these places. You know, you could be living in Alaska as a black man and you're going to be fine. You could be a super pasty white person and, you know, living in sub-Saharan Africa, and you're also going to be fine because those forces are no longer at work. But if we go back thousands of years ago, when people are struggling to get proper nutrition, they're not just going into the grocery store and just having all the food groups just on a silver platter, all this fruit that's out of season being flown in from other places and everything. I mean, a lot of people that are just living hand to mouth and just struggling to have enough food, or even if they are very civilized
Isn't most of the world struggling to have food? I mean, I get America as an exception. I know Europe has some exceptions here, but I mean, if we go to sub-Saharan Africa, are we going to really walk into a store and just get whatever food we want? Are they really just going to have just endless supplies of just groceries? I mean, I feel like this argument is kind of like an Americanized echo chamber.
Yeah, obviously you could definitely point to parts of the world where people are starving and struggling to get proper nutrition and where natural selection is going to work on those people. And there's going to be a survival of the fittest going on because people are struggling to get proper nutrition and whatever, or they're living in a really violent place where people are constantly being killed if they, you know, aren't strong enough, fast enough, coordinated enough or whatever. But yeah, you're right. I am thinking more about like America, Europe, South America, but even a lot of Africa is obviously, yeah, you are going to be able to walk into the grocery store in most African places and find all your food groups and find nutritious food in most of these places. Yeah, of course you could point to exceptions of places where people are really starving and doing that. I'm just bringing up the point though, that in the United States of America, Canada, Mexico, Europe, from a biological perspective, there's not natural selection going on as far as just people just surviving because they have a certain phenotype.
Well, I guess, I probably differ in opinion here a little bit. I would just say natural selection is still happening, but the technology that we have is artificially usurping natural selection. So technology can come into the equation and can potentially usurp what natural selection would do, and it can artificially adjust these particular results, but that the natural selection processes are still just constantly happening, that those forces are still at play, and especially with the elimination of technology, it would go back to that, you know, that heavy force that's being dictated by the equator, by climate, by other environmental factors that just kind of permeate.
Yeah, it's just if we were living outside, growing our own food, foraging our own food, and we're just constantly at war with our neighbors, and we have no climate control, and it's just super hot in the summer in Arizona, super cold in the winter in Minnesota or something, then, you know, there's going to be a lot more people dying, infant mortality, and just people dying young. And the strong are going to survive. And when I say strong, you know, it could be physical strength. It could be that you're adapted because you've got the dark skin or the light skin. It could be that you have the brains to survive as well. You know, you have to be smart about things. And here's the thing. If you look at these geographies, certain geographies could, you know, if we went back thousands and thousands of years when it was harder to survive, when these different skin colors would have emerged, okay, because obviously they're not new. This happened thousands of years ago. The point is that certain geographies could reward you for being able to plan ahead. Like, let's say you're living in a really cold place, and in the winter, everything's just going to be frozen, and you're not going to be able to get food, and you're going to have to build that cabin. You're going to have the wood pile stocked of firewood. You're going to have all the meat salted and preserved. You're going to dry out the fruits and do all those type of things to get through the winter. Whereas if you're living in a tropical climate near the equator, you know, you can pretty much, you know, relax a little bit because it's like you don't have to get ready for the long winter. And you're probably also going to be getting more like vitamins from fruits and vegetables, more like year round. You're going to have access to that kind of stuff. You're going to have access to seafood year round. You know, you're going to have sunshine year round. Whereas if you're in these cold places, you're really going to have to think ahead, build things. You're going to have to organize. So I think that that's a big part of it too. I don't think, see, I would say this, that there's definitely no genetic connection between like skin color and having big muscles or skin color and being smart or skin color and having these critical thinking skills or skin. But what it is that it could just be coincident. You know,
could it be, well, I wouldn't say coincidence. Could it be correlated, not like a causation though, in the sense that
it's when I say coincident, I mean, it's just two things that are happening at the same time. Because let's say you're far north, you got to be able to think ahead and plan and build things. And you're also going to have the light skin because it's cloudy all day and you got to get that vitamin D and, you know, you can still get more of.
Again, I would add to this and say that going just super far north isn't just like an intellect. There's not like an IQ scale. Like the further you go towards the North Pole, you just get smarter. Because I would argue that the Scandinavian countries where, you know, you maybe had Vikings in times past weren't necessarily going to be of a higher IQ or intelligence than those in Europe necessarily or Germany or something like that. It seems like intelligence is kind of a trait that's drawn out based on warfare. Just because, you know, from a warfare perspective, you have to survive. And typically what wins in warfare is more of a technology, intelligence factor than it is maybe a brute strength as time has evolved over time. And so you don't even necessarily have to have the quantity of troops. You don't even necessarily have the brute force or the brute strength. Sometimes you can outsmart your foe. Sometimes you can use technology to usurp them. So if you have superior castles, guns, you know, whatever it is, catapults, maybe you have horses, they don't have horses, you know, just different things throughout history. Maybe you have ships. Obviously that was a big factor for warfare throughout history. You know, today it's become an airfare battle, whether you have the right kind of, you know, technology to rule the skies. In the Ukraine war right now, the Russians are using a lot of drones, just taking drones and just bringing them over there and just killing people without even having to move a muscle. So I think warfare is constantly evolving through technology, and whoever yields the greatest technological advantages often are the ones that are going to win. So by being someone like, let's just say Germany specifically, why is Germany in World War II producing just so many superior technologies to a lot of the surrounding nations? It could just be out of necessity. I mean, they're surrounded on all sides by foes. You have the UK, you have Russia, you have France. That's kind of like surrounded on a lot of different sides. So they're almost forced by nature to think about warfare, to think about how to protect themselves, how to defend themselves. And as a result, they may end up acquiring more technologies, more inventions. It may be a trait that is more favorable in that particular geography. Whereas if you live in an isolated geography where no one's going to invade you and you're not surrounded by enemies, maybe that trait isn't necessarily as enforced through natural selection, through biological means. So, you know, I would say that there's definitely nothing where you could just say like, hey, just going north makes you smarter, or going south makes you dumber, or a certain skin color or whatever, but there could be correlations. I want to show some different, examples, and I don't have it in the document, but I put a bunch of charts in here, and I wanted to go to athletics because I feel like athletics shows a lot of the extremities that we would have. And, you know, I think that there's maybe some correlations there. I don't know if I have all these labeled. Can you do like the top 10 quarterbacks of all time? So the top 10 quarterbacks of all time, you know, based on this picture, it's all white guys, virtually speaking. Obviously some of them are a little bit, you know, they got a little bit of a tan there, except for maybe Patrick Mahomes. And you know, Patrick Mahomes is somebody that I would like to address in this conversation because, you know, from my perspective, I don't think that, quote, race mixing or having a lot of diversity from parents actually is necessarily a bad thing. I think that, you know, if you understand biology and genetics, you know, the more mix, typically the better result. But that doesn't mean that all mixing would actually be good, because if you took two, you know, strong people, but they're both dumb, your result might be someone that's strong, but they might be dumb. If you take two smart people that aren't athletic, you might get someone that's really smart, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily athletic. So just because you mix two different people doesn't mean you're going to get a great result per se or in a certain category. But by taking, you know, the best of both worlds, sometimes you could create what I would call like a genetic lottery winner again. And you get someone like Patrick Mahomes, who kind of has that black athleticism being brought with him. And then you have, you know, maybe the eye-hand coordination that some of these other quarterbacks are bringing to the table genetically. And you kind of get this mix. Cause it seems like my, just this is my personal opinion. Seems like when you look at athletics, it seems like the white skin people or the white people have better eye-hand coordination. And it seems like darker skinned people have a better athletic prowess. Like they have more speed, strength, agility. And so that white men can't jump, you know, that old adage has a little bit of truth or legitimacy to it. I want to skim through these quickly and then I'm going to get your thoughts here. Go to the best pass rushers of all time. Now we're going to see a pretty big difference here from quarterbacks to the best pass rushers. And I don't know how quickly they are able to swap these or not. But while they're pulling this up again, you know, when it comes to quarterbacks, some of this is going to be a little bit subjective. We're just talking about people that are standing in the pocket, just throwing the football. You know, for the most part, if you look at the NFL or you study it, typically it's a white guy that stands in the pocket and throws it. Typically the black quarterbacks are ones that rush the ball. They run the ball. So they're a dual threat, but they're usually not as good of a pocket passer. We talk about some of the best defensive ends. We talk about just someone that's going to just run through the line and tackle the quarterback. I mean, it's dominated again by mostly larger black men. You got J.J. Watt in there as an exception. You got a couple other people. When it comes to best pitchers of all time, I don't know if we can just rapid fire some of these or not. Maybe I'll just say it. Best pitchers, I mean, it's pretty much stacked with a bunch of white guys. Best 3-point shooters, which I thought was kind of interesting. Kind of a mixed bag. Yeah, so there's the pitchers. See if you can go to the top 10, best 3-point shooters. One that I thought was interesting, I even asked Gronk his opinion on this particular subject, and it's pretty much agreeing with me, but one thing it brought up was NFL kickers. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, have you ever seen a black NFL kicker, Ben?
Well, I don't watch much football,
okay,
but
so you're not a football enthusiast.
I'm not really a good.
It's just kind of an interesting thought experiment. So I just kind of like asked like all the kickers in the NFL. I don't know if you can go to those screenshots or not. I asked Gronk, I said, is there like any non-white NFL kickers that are actively on the roster right now? And it said that there was this guy named Carlos Santos. And I don't know if you can pull him up. Carlos Santos, but it was just kind of funny. I was just like, this is the non-white NFL kicker. This kind of makes me think of like when they say like Jews aren't white or something like that. Is that kind of argument? Then I asked Greg, I was like, is there anybody else? And just for sake of time, go to the Joey Sly one. It's the Tennessee Titans guy. He's got a blue jersey on. They said this guy's a black NFL kicker. So according to Google AI, it says this is a black NFL kicker. So that was kind of funny. I asked Gronk, like, you know, a lot of these questions. Now, I found on my own there is actually somebody for the New England Patriots. His Andrelis Borrelagus. I don't know how you say his last name. He sounded like there was some potential there. I don't know if you can go to him. He's got a green tie on. He looks like he might have some Spanish influence. So I'll admit that there is at least some NFL kickers that maybe weren't just like Snow White or whatever. Yeah, there we go. Andres Borrelagus is the New England Patriots kicker. So obviously you got a little bit of diversity in there. Fastest 100 meter sprinters. It's pretty much dominated by all black guys. Did you bring up Usain Bolt?
Yes.
And your bottom? Yeah, Benelong. famous swimmers, it's very white. Obviously, you could think of Michael Phelps as being in there. But, you know, to me, when you look at athletics, it's not a perfect picture, and there's always going to be exceptions. But it just seems like, and I felt like I noticed a pattern. It seemed like maybe some of the white guys had better eye-hand coordination. Some of the black guys had more speed, agility, physical endurance. According to statistics, like 99% of cornerbacks in the NFL are black. You know, you can look at other sports and other considerations. But then you sometimes have what I would call a super athlete. And a lot of times the super athletes are some of the best athletes of all time are these mixed people. So someone like Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter is someone that's coming from a mixed background. Can you pull up his picture of his parents? Yes, the next one. So that's his mom and dad there on, and I don't know how the audience is viewing this on the right or left side, but basically his mom and dad there. And then go to the Patrick Mahomes one. Yeah, there you go. So Derek Jeter is one of the greatest baseball players to ever play. You got Patrick Mahomes, arguably one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play in the NFL. And again, he's coming from an obvious mixed race family situation. You could look at Steph Curry. I think you could show them as the split. I think is the one of the next images there. Steph Curry, one of the greatest 3-point shooters to ever play in the NBA. And again, mixed parents. Tiger Woods, his parents, super mixed again. One of the greatest golfers to ever live. Here's my point, and this is why I want to bring this up. I do think that there's probably a little bit of truth to there's correlations to some of the predisposed genetics. I don't think that means that every white person has great eye-hand coordination. I don't think that every black person has a lot of speed and whatever. I'm just saying, like, in general populations, these things tend to be similar, and there's some correlation there. But that this is what's also important, is that even if there are these, you know, correlations, that when you mix them, sometimes you get these genetic lottery winners. You have these super athletes. And I see online, and a lot of people, they get really mad. They think that race mixing is a sin. They think race mixing causes bad outcomes. They think that race mixing is like pretty much the biggest crime that you could ever commit in the world. And I would argue, like, hey, how are we seeing like all of these amazing athletes coming from these situations? Well, this is why I bring all those topics up at the same time. If the white people are kind of predisposed to having really good eye-hand coordination and black people have the athleticism, then when you get these mixes, sometimes then you get this like eye-hand coordination and athleticism mix that you wouldn't normally get. And that's why they're these super athletes. You have to explain why is Tiger Woods so dominant? Why is Patrick Mahomes so dominant? Why is Steph Curry so dominant? Why is Derek Jeter so dominant? Probably because of the genetics, that they're getting different pools of genetics. And as a result, they're getting to select, hey, some of these better eye-hand coordination, these other genetics I didn't have. And they're getting to borrow from some of these athletic genetics. And so they end up becoming this super athlete, super specimen. And in my mind, it actually doesn't say, like, it's not saying, quote, race mixing is bad, but in fact, in some cases, it could even yield a better outcome. And that, you know, when you're too similar, like the Muslims, like the Jews, where they're marrying their first cousins and doing whatever, you start getting like really bad results. When people are too closely related biologically, you could end up having like horrific outcomes. Whereas when you bring in these diversities, you end up sometimes having, you know, athletic superstars. So like from my perspective, I don't think that race mixing is arguably a bad thing, an inherent sin or something that's wrong. I'm wanting to get your thoughts here, Pastor Anderson. I know I said a lot. I know you don't maybe care about the NFL, but I'm just kind of bringing this topic up.
Yeah, so, and here's
up.
The thing. We don't, I've never watched a football game in my entire life. I've never even sat through the Super Bowl. So I have no knowledge about football or interest in football.
No halftime show.
But here's the thing. Instead of talking about these rare exceptions, because obviously what you're saying about these, you know, really good athletes is valid, but instead of talking about the exception, which is just some, you know, tiny percentage of the population that's some super athlete, you know, even if we just talk about just everyone, how do our genetics work in general? Okay. Is that every single gene, we have two copies of it. Okay. Because our DNA is constantly being damaged and all of us have damaged DNA. And so it's like we get a backup is the idea here. And so you get half of your genes from your mom and half from your dad. And the way that works is that if you get a bad one, the good one covers you. Okay. So you're taking, when you get your genes from your mom and dad, you're taking the best of both worlds. So, you know, theoretically, it's going to be greater than the sum of the parts. And the way that I like to explain the importance of this backup to people is like, let's say that you have two cameras and you're filming a church service. And I remember when we were making documentaries with these fancy cameras, there were these cameras, they would shut off after 10 minutes for some reason, right? So you'd have to keep turning them back on. And the thing about that is that, you know, you're going to lose a couple of seconds while you're turning the camera back on, or maybe somebody walks in front of the camera. Just for some reason, a certain shot is unusable. Anybody who's edited video knows that this happens. And so when you have two cameras, well, then when the one camera goes bad, you can cut to the other angle and vice versa. If you have three cameras, then you're even less likely to have a point where nothing's working. Every camera's blocked, every camera's turned off or whatever. Okay. So here's the deal is, you know, we have all this genetic damage. We have all these mutations, all these bad genes. And so if we get two copies of everything, one copy from mom and one copy from dad, then, hey, if we have a bad one, no problem. We'll just go with, you know, if dad's is bad, we'll go with mom's. If mom's is bad, we'll go with dad's. At least we have one good gene at every locus, okay? But here's the problem is when people marry a close relative, like let's say you're marrying your first cousin, okay, there's a number that you can assign to this, okay? So siblings have 50% identical DNA, and, you know, a father and a son have 50% identical DNA. Nephew to uncle is going to be 25% identical. Grandson to grandfather, 25% identical DNA, 12.5% with first cousins. And it's really easy to do the math on this. Every time you take a step up or over on the family tree, you're just cutting it in half. So like, you know, I click up to my parents, boom, that's 50%. Click over to my mom's brother, boom, now we're down to 25%. His son, boom, down to 12.5%. Boom, his son, 6.25, right? His son, 3.125% identical DNA. It's pretty easy to do this math and these calculations. But when we say that, and here's the thing, a lot of these white supremacist racist types who just haven't studied genetics will just be like, well, it doesn't make sense because we all have like 90%, you know, DNA with each other. So how can you say you have 50? Obviously, when we say 50% identical DNA, we're talking about the things that could be different. We're not talking about the gene that says that we have two ears and two eyes and a mouth and a nose. We're talking about things that could be different, things that are frequently different from person to person. Okay. You are going to be at least minimum 50% identical with your sibling and 1/8 identical with your first cousin. So here's what that means. That means that if I married my first cousin, okay, 1/8 of the time, our genes are going to be identical so that if there's a problem, we both have that problem. Okay. And we all have tons of damage on our DNA. So if 1/8 of the time there's no backup, that's what happens when you marry your cousin. 1/8 of the time there's no backup and that bad gene is going to be expressed in your child. Okay. But then what you have to understand is that the Muslims and the Jews, they didn't marry their cousin one time. They have been marrying their cousins over and over and over again. Like I was just rereading the 1001 Arabian Nights, and that's pretty much composed, you know, from around like 900 AD to 1400 AD, because the different stories were composed at different times. So some of the oldest source material is maybe around 900 AD, some of the later stuff around 1400, and then there's even some later stuff that's just kind of thrown in from the 1800s. It's not really part of the main corpus, but it's all talking about marrying your cousin a lot. Like in the stories, the main character is just frequently marrying his first cousin in the stories. And so that just kind of shows that that's a big part of their culture, you know, even going back a really long time. So if you're marrying your cousin over and over and over again, you're going to stack up genetic damage. Now, when you talk about like, oh, marrying someone of another race could be beneficial, you know, because at least their DNA is really different. Like, you're not related at all. So basically you could fix their bad DNA and they could fix your bad DNA. And there is a lot of truth to that. Now, here's the thing though, is it doesn't have to be someone of another race though, because like, for example, I married my wife. We're both white people, but she's from the other side of the world. And so she's from Germany. She's half German, half Hungarian. Well, you know, to my knowledge, I don't really have any German or Hungarian ancestors that I know of. So like, we are genetically very different, even though we're both white people and we got married. All of our kids are really healthy, really smart. Like, they all have the hardware and, you know, they're good looking. And it's just because of the fact that, you know, the genetic diversity is there. If you married your first cousin, you married your second cousin, you're much more likely to have deformed children and problems. And obviously, you know, you could have those things anyway. You could just by chance have the same genetic problem as someone else. But when you're marrying a relative that's close, it's not just that you might have problems. It's that your kids will for sure have problems because that's just the way DNA works. Okay. And it's interesting. If you look historically, when the Spanish came and colonized the New World, you know, they talked a lot about genetics and they have all these charts. And this is before genetics had been invented or discovered or thought of. So they weren't thinking of it in genetic terms because nobody knew about the science, right? Because Gregor Mendel is the father of genetics. He's an Austrian monk and he's in the late 19th century. He was a contemporary of Charles Darwin, but neither Gregor Mendel nor Darwin like knew about each other's work. Like, Darwin for sure did not know about Mendel's work. So when Charles Darwin is coming up with his theories, he didn't really know anything about genetics because genetics as a science hadn't been developed yet because he wasn't familiar with Mendel's work necessarily. Okay. Gregor Mendel's work didn't become important until the 20th century with the science of genetics emerging. Then they're going back and digging out Mendel's stuff and saying, oh, wow, this guy, you know, did all this great study on this. And I say that to say this is that, you know, that's why there's so many flaws in Darwin's thinking, because he doesn't know about genetics at all. He doesn't know about DNA. I mean, DNA wasn't really understood well until the middle of the 20th century. And, you know, that's an irreducible complexity that flies in the face of, you know, life originating on its own, as someone like Darwin would have believed. Okay. And so I got on a little rabbit trail there, but the point that I'm making is that long before Mendel or Darwin or any of these guys, you know, the Spanish were talking about, quote, purifying the blood of the natives. Okay. And they had these charts about how, like, if the native marries a Spaniard a few times, then their blood gets, quote unquote, purified. And this is usually pointed to as like the extremely racist and offensive, like that they're somehow saying, oh, these brown people are dirty and we're clean or whatever. But I don't think that's necessarily what they were getting at. I'm not just defending everything about the Spaniards and their philosophies, of course. But what you have to understand is that people who travel a lot and have a lot of transportation are probably a lot more likely to have good, healthy genetic diversity than people who are living in a very isolated place. That's where the inbreeding is going to happen. You know, so if you think about it, a lot of the natives, you know, if they were really an isolated tribe and they're not really hanging around with other tribes and stuff, they could get really inbred. I'm not saying they were all like that, because some of them did get around a lot and intermarry with other people, but some of them did have that problem. And so you could have people.
I want to interrupt here and I want to summarize where you're going with this for audience's sake. You know, again, you're basically trying to break down the legitimate biology here. You're saying if you're too close, then there's going to be too many mistakes when your genetics collide. But as long as there's, at least as long as you're far enough away, you're going to probably be okay. And again, I'm not saying that you have to find the most extreme antithesis to yourself to actually have the best results. But what I am saying is that
there are differences between populations, and those populations could be observed through what happens biologically if borrowing the best traits. Because, again, if you took two really smart people, you could potentially yield a really smart child. If you took really two tall people, you could yield a really tall child. If you took, you know, like if you're focusing on any particular outcome, you could possibly manipulate the situation, just like dog breeders kind of do, where they're trying to like draw out certain traits in their dogs. You can draw these out humanly speaking. And to me, the evidence that that's true is these genetic specimens that we see in athletics, like a Tiger Woods, like a Steph Curry, like a Derek Jeter, kind of illustrating my point, broader point that, hey, I think there are some predispositions. There are some genetic related intangibles here that are being realized through these mega athletes. Someone suggested in the chat, no, I think that they just worked harder than everybody else. Well, I'm not saying that athletes don't work hard. I'm not even saying those guys didn't work hard. But it would be kind of a coincidence that just the greatest athletes happen to all be mixed and they just all happen to work harder than everybody else. I think what's more likely is that every athlete works super hard and trains, and that they just had a higher capacity to perform because of these genetic predispositions. You know, Pastor Anderson marrying a woman from Europe is going to benefit probably from those genetic diversities more than someone marrying someone that's a lot more closely related. You're probably going to have a better genetic polling. And in my opinion, you probably have a little bit better genetic outcome just overall because of the fact that you're getting that much more diversity in the genetics. And so my point is that by bringing in more genetic diversity, you're probably going to have a better outcome, just generally speaking. Whereas when you're really close related, you have the higher likelihood of a worse outcome.
Yeah, but there's a law of diminishing returns, though. So what my point is that just marry a non-relative and you're fine. Yeah. As long as you marry a non-relative, it should be fine. You know, even if you're like seventh cousins and don't know it or something, sixth cousins and don't know it, because nobody knows who their sixth and seventh cousins are. You could easily accidentally do that and it wouldn't matter. It's not going to hurt anything. But first cousins, second cousins, that's where the danger is. And yeah, marrying somebody who's for sure very different genetically is probably going to yield the best outcome. What I'm saying is that interracial marriage is definitely not going to produce in an inferior product. It will produce a child that is greater than the sum of its parts most of the time, just because of the way genetics work, where you get two genes, you're going to, you know, the one that's the non-damaged gene is the one that's going to be expressed. And the one that's damaged is going to be recessive.
This is what I hear constantly online, though, is I hear, well, race mixing causes a lower IQ. Okay.
That's not true, though. I don't think there's any evidence for that.
Well, wait a minute. Let me address this, and I'll have you answer it. Let's just say that that's even true to some degree. It could be that it's not necessarily a bad outcome, though, because what we're talking about is, let's just say we take two people and they mate and they both had really high IQ, so then their child's IQ. And then you take someone that was high IQ and someone was lower IQ and they mate and they produce a quote lower IQ. But that's just one category. They may have actually benefited from several other particular trait benefits, whereas it's like just by only ever trying to mate for IQ, could end up having detriments in other aspects of their genetics. Is that not true?
Yeah, obviously there's more to life than just IQ.
Right. So just because you may like take a group of people where, hey, one group of people has a lower IQ and another group has a higher IQ, let's just say for sake of argument that was true, and they mated, the net result might be a little lower IQ initially, but you're also going to have all these other benefits and several other categories. And again, over time, it's actually going to have a genetic product that's better than if you're only going for necessarily one particular attribute. So like my idea is like America specifically. America is getting German, Spanish, French. It's getting Irish. It's also mixing in with the Native Americans. That melting pot of the early colonies and early American is a lot bigger pool of genetics than just if you just only live in Germany, if you only live in France, if you only live in UK.
I would almost argue that Americans probably benefited from having a more diverse genetic pool throughout the 1600s to the present day than the Europeans being isolated into just a smaller group of genetics, and that you may even have a better genetic outcome overall. I'm just kind of curious, is that even realistic? Or
yeah, there are obviously places in America where that's not true, like, for example, in the Appalachian Mountains and Kentucky or something. There are these communities where they've been inbreeding and people are severely deformed, super low IQ.
Well, how would that disagree with what I'm saying? That agrees with what I'm saying, right?
I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm saying that in
there's exceptions America, to that though.
I'm saying that in America, you're right that we've mixed people from all over the world, even just quote unquote white people. We had different white people from different places because there's, you know, England, Ireland, Germany, France, Spain, whatever. But what I'm saying is that in places in America where you have white people that are inbred living in these areas in the Appalachians, that they can be super low IQ. I'm just saying it's not about skin color, because the white supremacist comes along and just, oh, white people are just smarter. But you could go to a place where it's a bunch of white people and they're inbreeding and their IQs are super low,
right,
and they're physically handicapped and physically damaged. And so, you know, it's really just that you don't want to be inbred. And a lot of these Muslim countries, part of the reason why their IQs are so low, because look, just look at a map of IQ, average IQ across the world, and it's dramatically different. You know, Somalia, the average IQ is like 68 or something. Whereas in America, Europe, places like that, it's going to be around 100. And then it's like 68 in Somalia or something. You know, that's the thing that you see a lot on X right now. Why is the IQ so low in Somalia? Well, you know, you have Islam, which involves inbreeding, number one. But then you also just have bad nutrition, poverty, just it's just like a failed state in a lot of ways. And so if you're growing up in this bad environment of, you know, bad nutrition, your mom's getting bad nutrition when she's pregnant with you, and then you're not having access to education, your whole religion is based on bragging about how the founder of your religion is illiterate and Muhammad's this wonderful illiterate guy. So then it's like an illiterate. Look up the 10 most illiterate countries in the world, and they're Muslim countries. But to get back to what I was originally saying about the Spanish, the reason I was bringing that up is because, you know, when you think about like the Nazis and eugenics and things like that, you know, obviously that's wicked, because we shouldn't be breeding people like cattle or breeding people like dogs or something and saying, oh, well, you know, we need to only allow these certain people to breed and these people can't breed. Because, you know, if you thought about it from like a totalitarian dystopia perspective, you could think of like a state where certain people aren't allowed to procreate because we need to get rid of their bad genes. They're not smart enough, or they're not athletic enough, or you're not allowed to have kids because you have problems or whatever. But in reality though, what you could do to fix those things is just, if those people would just stop inbreeding and start eating healthy food and living a normal, healthy life and marrying people, you know, from outside the family, over time, their genes would be purified. It would get fixed. You would fix those problems over time, and the better genes would emerge. And so, you know, you don't need to just throw people in the trash, is my point, is that basically you could fix the genes, you could purify the genes over time. So even if the Spanish, you know, had that concept in a pre-scientific kind of an idea of, hey, we can purify these genes over the course of a couple generations, you know, there is like some truth to it that, you know, if people have genetic abnormalities, then, you know, marrying outside the group and being healthy, you know, after a few generations, you could have some really smart, healthy.
So you're saying there's hope for the Muslims and the Jews if they just get saved, become a Christian, and actually marry someone that's a lot different than them. You could purify those genetics.
Over time, it's going to get better, you know, and it's going to be fine.
I want to let Ben ask a few. He wants to put some chat comments in here, yeah. And then I want to play a video. You brought up Somalia
So I'm going to bring up this video in a minute, but what are our chat comments saying?
Well, before we even got into the discussion on inbreeding, we had Urbanic Ryan 06 in the chat room say Muslims marry their first cousins, have lowest IQ. Baptist Christian says royal families in Europe had a lot of problems from inbreeding. So did ancient Egypt, and they had a lot of diseases from it. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's definitely been
agreement.
There's agreement in the chat room, but also just to add a little commentary is that there's definitely been observable, you know, abnormalities and deformities that have resulted from inbreeding.
Andrew Gwinnan had a good comment. He said Tim Walz brought in all the Somalians because they make him feel smart. So that's a pretty legit comment there.
Let's play this
video and get some thoughts though. I want to play this video because this is what you see online, and it is real that in Africa they have something different going on. Let's play this video. I don't know what's up with the music. This is people in Africa that are in like these remote tribes seeing a mirror for the first time. That's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Wow.
All right, so
they don't really know how to react.
Now here's the thing. You're saying this isn't an IQ thing, this is a culture issue. Right, Ben?
I think the link between skin color and IQ is predominantly environmental, cultural, etc. I don't think that we could say that somebody who has a certain skin color is just genetically predisposed no matter what, and that it would have been the same had their environmental or cultural surroundings been different. Hopefully that makes sense.
Andrew Gwynn says, what part of London
is this?
This
guy's mom.
Pastor Anderson, clean up what I said.
Pastor Shelley, so it makes me interrupt him because...
Go ahead.
He's super quiet on my end for some reason. I don't know why. Like, Ben sounds normal to me, and Pastor Shelley's really quiet. But basically, like, you know, if this guy's mom had actually eaten healthy food while she was pregnant with him, and then he grew up eating a healthy diet and learning how to read at a young age and studying and going to school, you know, that, yeah, maybe this guy's not going to be an engineer or something, but he could still be, he'd be at a much higher intelligence than what he's at living in this primitive culture, you know, in an unhealthy and an abnormal environment. Okay. But yeah, obviously
apart from inbreeding, arguably we don't even know what these people's potential is, right? I mean, it's not like they're getting to exercise their potential here. So
now you sound loud to me, by the way. It's fixed.
Okay, good. So it's not necessarily fair, but at the same time, it is an observed reality. People in Africa without, you know, the same culture and technology are not inventing things. They're not.
So the question is why?
The question's why, but I want to play another video because I think this is important. I don't know if we can play the other video of this, this black guy being interviewed. I think we played it before in the past, but I want to get that thought, and I'll give my crew a second to bring this up.
While you're queuing up the video, is just what it is that, you know, inbreeding is only part of the story. Okay. Evolution's only part of the story. And obviously when we say evolution, obviously we believe in the biblical creation account of the Bible. We're talking about microevolution, and obviously evolution is playing a role. Obviously, education's playing a role, nutrition's playing a role. It's a whole bunch of different things. I mean, in order to have these abysmal IQs where the average IQ in Mauritania is 58 or something, or 68 in Somalia, or, you know, 70 over here, 70 something. And then you look at Europe and it's like all around 100. And you look at America and it's 100. You look at, you know, East Asia and Japan's 105 or 106 or something. Like, obviously there's a difference, but the question is what's driving it. And I would argue that it's not one thing that's driving it. It's a whole bunch of different things that are driving it. Environmental factors, you know, education factors, nutrition, and genetics. inbreeding, like all of those things. And some of these places with the really low IQ, it's just a perfect storm of just bad factors that are just driving the IQ.
I want to bring another one too, is the spiritual forces. So we got natural selection.
The point is, you could fix these people. You could fix Somalia if they would become Christians, if they would start getting literate and eat a balanced diet and be educated and not inbreed and not do those things. And you know, you could bring up that IQ.
Well, I think an individual can be an exception to every category, period.
Of course.
I think that there could be someone from Somalia that could be the smartest person ever. You could have a white person that's the most athletic person ever. You could have a Japanese person that's super tall. I mean, look at Showtime. The guy in, you know, that's playing for the LA Dodgers, he's arguably one of the greatest baseball players to ever play. He's from Japan. And Japan's not known for having just tons and tons of professional baseball players, but he is an exceptional person.
They're actually really into baseball in Japan.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, let's be honest.
Yeah.
The top baseball players of all time are not just a list of Japanese players. He's an exception when it comes to that particular category. I'm not saying that, obviously Cuba has lots of baseball fans and stuff, but you know, there's a lot more Cubans in the, I believe it, we could just fact check this, but I guarantee there's probably more, you know, people from the Caribbean playing in the Major League Baseball than there is Japanese. But I don't know. At the end of the day, when it comes to these forces, though, spiritual forces are also at play. And I want to get this clip from this guy because he kind of brings this up at the end of the clip. But let's see what this guy has to say.
It was created by us to describe something we're confused about.
So you're saying black folks created that name white supremacy?
That's correct. From Africa. From Africa. Because we are just amazed by the things they've done. Well, we describe them always by inventions. When you take a toy and the toy is talking and it's moving, we're like, oh my God. Because yes, my people are not sophisticated, you know.
Why would we call a white person a white supremacist if, you know, well, I think it's because we were enslaved.
No, not. It is just observing the mere industrialization of their environment, which we haven't done. That's all. They can command water from far away through tubes into their bedrooms. We can even fetch a bucket of water from the next lake. You will be drowned. They can put electricity. We never had one in Africa. They have airplanes fly over us. It's amazing. Everything they've done is the reason my people say these people are superior. Not because of slavery. They came to colonize us and they brought things we have never seen before. They gave a king a mirror and he was dancing and sold his people away. They brought guns we have never seen, boom, and killed somebody right away. You know what they used to do in the Congo? They put dynamite in the rocks, and then they hide the switch. And then when they point their finger, it go boom. And the Congolese, till today, they call the white man kiboom, the sound of the dynamite. And then they go down, and they go like this. If they're not superior, why do you see every picture when the white men arrive in Africa, we bow into them? The Portuguese in my own town, Gele, ordered his people. As soon as the Portuguese showed up, everybody was bowing. We have never seen a gun kill a human being. We have never seen a mirror. We have never seen a radio tune in and somebody is speaking from England, the Queen's voice. So for us, all these things, these people must be really superior and close to God. They used to have a joke in Ghana that when God said, let's pray, the white man opened his eyes. The black people were covering his eyes. So the white man saw how God created the world. That's why they are so good at what they do. And I'm telling you, these are folklores from which we grew up. If anyone told you that white people came to Africa to tell us they're superior, it's a lie. They never said that.
So again, this guy brings up this idea that, hey, the white man, from some of these people's perspective, is just closer to God. And, you know, again, some of these things are not necessarily prevalent in today. I know you go to Africa, you go to major cities, they're going to have cars, they're going to have buildings, they're going to have a lot of technology, but that's obviously been brought to them through a lot of colonization. And you kind of have to ask this question, you know, why is certain parts of the world colonizing other parts of the world? Like, why did that happen? And I would say that there's got to be a spiritual force that's not only, you know, we've talked about some biological forces, natural selection. We've talked about just other geographic, you know, relation issues. Maybe, you know, some places are more predisposed to be lazy or hardworking. But also there's got to be a spiritual element here that you know, where God is, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there's liberty. You know, you look at places that are some of the most horrific places to live in the world today. It's places where Christianity is the least free. I mean, North Korea has got to be one of the most horrific places to ever live right now. China, any of these totalitarian communist regimes, some of the worst places to live as far as just freedom is concerned, maybe not necessarily industrialized perspective, but just from a freedom perspective. So, you know, what do you think about this, Pastor Anderson, from a spiritual forces as well? Like, is there also some element of civilization, technology, any of that related to the spiritual forces at play here too?
Yeah, and I would say that Christianity explains a lot more of white people's success than the fact that they're white. That's why I don't like to make it about race, because I don't think it's helpful to make it about race. You know, I think it's more important that we focus on religion. And if you think about it, yeah, historically, Christianity is more prevalent in Europe than in sub-Saharan Africa. And obviously, yeah, now missionaries have brought the gospel to sub-Saharan Africa. And now there's tons of saved, born-again Christians in sub-Saharan Africa. But historically, that wasn't really necessarily the case. You know, you got a lot of just, you know, pagan, witchcraft kind of religions. And then, you know, just other places in this world have also been ungodly. India has been Hindu. You know, East Asia has been Buddhist. The Native Americans, they had their pagan, satanic religions and everything like that. Obviously, Christianity is the only true religion. Obviously, God gives to a man that is good in his sight, wisdom. And so, yeah, we have Christianity being a driving force for modern Western civilization. And so a lot of that is because we're Christian. And if people convert to Christianity, it doesn't matter red, yellow, black, and white. They can be intelligent, successful, hardworking, industrious, productive people. And here's the thing. When you think about in America today, the races that we have today in America, right? We have red and yellow, black and white in America that have been here for a long time. Okay. Now, obviously, if some Muslim Somalian immigrant just fresh off the boat is as dumb as frick, that's not really going to shock us because he's coming from this Muslim crap hole country and whatever. But here's the thing. Most black people in America that have been here for a long time have already mixed with white people anyway, you know, because we've all – and we all probably, if we went back far enough, these white supremacists are in denial, like, oh, I'm just pure white all the way back or something. But it's just – that's just denial. We all have lots of ancestors. We're all mixed.
I mean, they'll say Jews aren't white, and then they'll say they have this perfect white ancestry.
People think I'm – it's funny because people who are stupid think they're smart is what I've noticed in life. The stupider people are, the smarter they think they are. And these white supremacist retards claiming to just be pure 100% white, it's like they don't understand the math and they don't understand the science. And that's why they need to go watch our documentary, Marching to Zion, and watch the 20-minute scene where I show the math on genetics and family tree and show how if you know, you have two parents, you have four grandparents, you have eight great-grandparents, it's exponential, right? So how many grandparents do you have? 2 squared. How many great-grandparents? 2 to the 3rd power. How many great-great-grandparents? 2 to the 4th power. Okay, so you go back 10 generations – or say about 300 years, and we're talking 2 to the 10th power, right? So we're talking about like 1,000+, right? 1,024 ancestors you're going to have 10 generations back. You go back 20 generations, about 600 years, you're going to get over 1 million. You know, and like I've probably already gone over the head of some of these white supremacists, even though this is really basic like algebra 1 level stuff here. But you have millions and millions of ancestors just within the last 1,000 years alone. You're going to tell me that out of all those millions of ancestors, they're all just as white as snow. I mean, it's just stupid and makes no sense.
I mean, everyone is. I want to challenge that idea, though. I want to say this. Is it possible for anybody on the earth today to have basically their descendants are just basically all from Japheth and his wife or from Ham and his wife, or Shem and his wife?
Absolutely not. That's stupid and absurd Because first of all, Shem, Ham, and Japheth all lived together for 100 years after the flood. And I guarantee you that people are marrying their cousin more than they're marrying their sibling. And so if you're a child of Japheth, you're marrying one of Shem's kids. You're marrying one of Ham's kids. They're totally intermarried. And what's funny is the people act like, oh, the Jews are this isolated group that only marries within itself. Or that's funny because every single Bible story, start to finish, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, 12 tribes in Egypt, coming out of Egypt, judges, monarchy, they are always intermarrying with the heathen. Over and over again, every single time. I mean, Joseph himself's wife is Egyptian. Moses marries an Ethiopian. I mean, it's just constant intermarriage. Well, guess what? That's what human beings have always done. Okay? You can even have a society that says, we don't marry outsiders. Well, guess what? Somebody's going to. And human beings love to travel. Human beings are explorers. There have always been missionaries, traders, explorers that have gone around sailing here and there and everywhere. And mixing, and all of our DNA is mixed, and we're all mixed together. And to think that you have people that are just totally just one thing, anybody who's that inbred is going to be deformed and stupid. Okay, so the point is that
at some point there's got to be some diversification, though, right? Like at some point you kind of have like, I mean, the Japanese people kind of have a certain look. The Chinese people had a certain look, especially if you go back 100 years. It seems like, while it's not like everybody's the exact same, and I'm not saying there isn't some genetic diversity.
No, but the point is that here's the thing. First of all, Japan is the most extreme example of isolation you could pretty much think of because they made a big point to be isolated. But obviously there's total intermarriage between Japanese and Chinese and Koreans, or like, you're going to tell me that these people aren't connected? Guess what? They are. You know, there have been times when Japan was really closed off, but other times when it was a lot more open. And when they're colonizing China and colonizing Korea and all these different places, you know, there's been mixing throughout history. Obviously, yeah, you have, you know, white people and black people, but look at black people in America and then look at black people in Africa. You know, the black people in America are usually a lot lighter skin. And there's a reason why they're lighter skin, because they are more mixed in with white people.
I wonder,
you know what I mean? It's just,
yeah, I wonder.
Like the Indians, like Native Americans, like the Native Americans in Arizona, the Navajos. I was up soul winning on the Navajo reservation, and I'm preaching the gospel to this Navajo girl, and she's saying, oh, the white man this, the white man that. I said, hold out your arm. She held out her arm. I held my arm up to her arm, and I was darker than her. And I said, do you believe that you're 100% Navajo? Or do you believe that maybe in the last 400 years that we have lived together, white people and Navajos have lived together in Arizona for 400 years, do you think that maybe some of your ancestors are white people, which is why you're even lighter than I am? Like, she had some Navajo features, but she was white also. And she's just like, no, I'm just 100% Navajo. I'm just purely Navajo. That's just stupid. I mean, it's just
I agree with you with from an American perspective, there's so much more mixing than we probably realize. But like, am I going to really say that Japanese, South Korean people just have this just like endless African genealogy of like Somalians and Ethiopians?
No, but I'll guarantee you that they have intersected somewhere along the way with black people at
maybe
some
we go
point.
Back really far, but it
I don't think you'd have to go back super duper far. No, I don't.
So you think let's just go back 500 years. You think there was a lot of cross section?
It would only take, think about it. It would only take one black guy marries a Korean and has a mixed child, right? And then basically that person just reintegrates into Korea, and then that DNA just spreads to the whole system.
But it's not going to spread to the whole system. It's only going to spread to a certain percentage of the – I mean, it could be a super small percentage.
Okay, but that's one example. And then another example comes in. All I'm saying is it's like dropping a drop of ink into a glass of water or something. As soon as you bring in foreign DNA, you know what I mean, it's going to just spread into the population.
Well, it seems like Spanish, you take the Spanish, right? They come and they mix with the indigenous peoples in America. And they almost, in my opinion, kind of create their own classification of new people, like Mexicans. Like, it's not like Mexicans exist prior to the Europeans, basically conquering a lot of America.
No, Mexicans are a product of intermarriage between the white Spaniards and the indigenous people.
Right.
They mix together and the product is a quote unquote Mexican.
Right. So what I'm saying though is that then they kind of continue that lineage, and it's like a lot of them are kind of marrying each other and they just continue to be Mexican. But like, obviously you also had some Africans mixing in with them. So you have some.
Yeah. And it's easy to pull out like Japan as an example or something, but you know what? Who cares about Japan? You know, we're in America. We're talking about America. We're talking about countries that are near us and everything. You bring up the most extreme example of just weird isolation. But even then, there's 127 million people in Japan and they weren't isolated the whole time. For the last 500 years.
Sure.
And there are people coming and going, and there's been mixing, and there's people who got in and out and mixed.
Well, I want to make one more comment about Japan.
But let me say this about you know, America and Mexico.
Okay, well, let me finish this Japan thought so you can do that. I fact-checked myself. There are 34 Cuban players in the MLB and 12 Japanese. So there's about three times as many Cubans in the MLB than the Japanese. And I know Japanese like
baseball. Yeah, but here's the thing about that though. Why would Japanese people play Major League Baseball in America? Japanese people are living in Japan. You know,
so everybody wants to play in America. I mean,
Japanese people again are an outlier because there's like 100 out of 128 million people who speak Japanese, 127 million of them live in Japan. They're like the least people to go and emigrate somewhere else.
I would think an even bigger outlier would probably be North Korea, though, just based off of how isolated that country is. And like, you're not even allowed to leave legally.
That's true, but that's only very recently, though.
In history, Japan, yeah.
Like Japan spent hundreds of years being closed off and trying to be closed off.
Yeah.
And
there's a lot of places are like that. Australia doesn't have a huge black population. You have India doesn't have a huge African population intermingling with it. Most of Asia, when we talk about China, Korea, and Japanese, like these groups of people are definitely keeping themselves. But of course, to your point, you have the Mongolian Empire stretching across huge geographies, probably caused lots of mixing throughout that period of time. You obviously have the slave trade,
Empire,
dragging people everywhere at different times throughout history.
Yeah, the Mongolian Empire connected, you know, China all the way to Europe, and there's all kinds of cross-pollination that happened during that time that would have mixed in these different groups. And the thing is, like, you know, if we just think about our part of the world, because it's always easy to talk about some other distant part of the world that nobody knows about, or that people – because we all know more about the history of North America and Europe than we know about like the history of Korea, China, and Japan. So it's easy to just make these claims about Japan or make claims about the history of China and Korea, you know, because it's going to be harder – to fact check you know, when we're talking about stuff that the audience isn't familiar with. Here's what the audience is familiar with: Canada, US, Mexico, South America, Europe, West Coast of Africa. Now let's think about that. The black slaves were brought to all these places. You had the transatlantic slave trade coming into the Caribbean, coming into Canada, North America, you know, Mexico. There are black people in all of these places. Europeans had black slaves, Caribbean people, US, Mexico, right? I agree.
I have no idea what the history is. According to Grok, I said how many Africans are migrating to Japan, and it said almost zero before 1900. So according to the hive mind of ideas.
But see, again, who cares? The point, are we arguing with Japanese people online? No, we're arguing with a white guy from freaking Nebraska or, you know, or whatever, from Idaho, claiming, I have no black ancestor.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's the point.
Because I'm saying millions and millions of black people have lived amongst us and with us for centuries. And if you go back 500 years, you have just a million ancestors. And so, yeah, some of them are black people. It's just a fact.
Well, again, what you know, to point to that,
I'm dumb for saying this, but they're the ones who just don't understand the math and the science.
Well, their genealogy.
I think there's truth on both sides of this, because number one, I think that some people in America could probably point to both their mother and father's side and kind of point to quite a few immigrants and that they came fresh off the boat from Europe. And it is possible they didn't have much mingling. But then you also have people like Patrick Mahomes and Tiger Woods.
But Europe
and some
is
of these
super
people.
Mingled though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, you could have people like Patrick Mahomes or whatever. Let's just say they married another white person or something. Like, it doesn't seem like it takes that many generations to get to a point where you couldn't even tell at all. Like, there's no way to tell.
Of course it does. It takes three or four generations and it's gone. Like, for example, famously, you know, Thomas Jefferson and a black woman produced a daughter. But don't quote me on this. But if I recall, Thomas Jefferson's daughter is like half black, half white, that he, you know, he had like a child out of wedlock with a slave or something. And, you know, she looks pretty white. If she marries a white guy, you're not even going to know. After a couple generations, you're just going to think this is a white person. And you're never going to know in a million years that there was a black ancestor there. Okay. Same thing.
He had two black daughters.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So look at Obama. Okay. Obama's mom is white as snow.
Right.
But if Obama is married to a black person, has a black child, and then that black person marries another black person, you're not going to realize that there's a white person right there. And it's the same thing. When some of these athletes that you put on the screen that are half black and half white, if that person married a white person and then their kid married a white person, you're never going to think, oh, there's a black ancestor there. And that's where these white supremacists claiming, oh, I have no black ancestors. It's stupid, because if the black ancestor were even just four generations back, you'd never know it. Five generations back, it's probably not going to be expressed. And here's the thing. We've all known those people where they just have like that. They'll be like people who have like one kid that just looks a lot different than the rest of their kids.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about a non-paternity event. Like,
I agree.
They still look like their dad in other ways. But racially, like for example, you know, I'm thinking of a particular family where, you know, you have the dad is very dark Hispanic, you know, because he's got like some Portuguese mixed in and probably some slaves mixed in there back there too, you know. And so it's like you have a really dark dad and the mother's white. And so all the kids look like they're like brown. They're like Latino, half brown, you know, half white. But then there's just one child that's just white as snow, and you'd never know that her dad is this dark. She just
Seen it where both parents are pretty white, and the child's just a little darker than both their parents. And it's definitely, you know, it's their child. It's not like it's not their child. Or you could have the
but it's
exact
coming from
opposite.
A grandparent. It could be coming from a great grandparent or grandparent. But here's the thing. If you go enough generations, because here's another thing that like white supremacists will bring up is like, oh, pretty soon white people are going to be extinct. And we're going to like they'll use this illustration of like, well, if you just take all the crayons and melt them all together, everybody just becomes brown. So like if we racially mix, we're all just going to turn into Tiger Woods, basically.
Right.
Like, we're all just going to look the same. But that's not true, because you could basically make someone white again in a few generations. You could make someone totally black again in a few generations, right? So if somebody's like super mixed and they marry a white person who marries a white person who marries a white person, boom, they're totally white. Or
exactly. They
marry a black person who marries a black person and they go totally black, or go back to being Japanese, Chinese, Korean, whatever. You know what? Here's the thing is that, you know, everybody's just like, oh, Korea, oh, China, oh, Japan, or whatever, being whatever. Here's the thing. Why is it that in movies they constantly use Chinese actors to play Japanese people and vice versa. In Hollywood movies, they will use Chinese actors to play Japanese people, vice versa, and mix and match, but supposedly they're so freaking different. Well, then how come the viewer can't even tell the difference?
He just pissed off both of them right now. Because you want to piss off those people, they'll say, like, tell them they look the same, and they somehow lose their minds.
Okay, but then what I'm saying is true, though, that they will use Chinese actors to play Japanese people in films.
Yeah.
And nobody's just like, well, that's clearly not a Japanese. That person's obviously Chinese. You know, here's the thing. The whole writing system in Japan comes from China. China's writing system went to Korea and Japan.
That's interesting.
But how did it get there?
All right, so I have a factoid question.
A massive amount of Japanese culture comes straight from China.
All right, so let's put you to the test. Jackie Chan, Japanese or Chinese, Ben?
Chinese.
Obviously, he's Chinese.
Says that was easy. Japanese movies.
I mean, that's a stupid question.
That was easy.
Oh, I don't know.
Obviously, genes have been spread throughout the world, especially in the modern era when you have air travel and things like that happening. But I like the point, though, because you look at these white supremacist types, and they want to act like they're these purebred. Oh, man, generations. It's like, bro, if you just look at your genealogy, you'll see that there's been mixing. You're not as purebred as you actually think you are. There's been mixing going on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So, like, how about this? Stop obsessing over the color of your skin and get an actual hobby is what I would say.
Yeah, because I've noticed that the people who take the most glory and boast about being white the most typically have the least achievements themselves. You know, it's funny. They'll sit there and talk about all the great achievements of white people, but it's like, bro, what have you achieved? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, and plus, what does the Bible say? The Bible says that we should not glory in our flesh. Let him that glorieth glory in the Lord. We should not boast about our flesh. We should not be prideful about our ethnicity or our flesh. We should be proud of the Lord Jesus Christ, our Savior, proud of Christianity, proud of the Bible, proud of our Christian culture, yes. But just glorying in the color of your skin or putting someone else down because of the color of their skin it's not profitable. And so here's the thing. Going back to your Mario Kart illustration at the beginning, say, oh, these people are stronger. Oh, these people are smarter. Oh, what's the point of talking about that or fixating on that? Because all you're doing is just making people feel bad about themselves, or you're just making people feel, too good about themselves. And so, like, here's what I would say to the white supremacists of this world. Because obviously the reason you're even having this broadcast is because of the fact that this white supremacist mentality is on the rise. It's popular. It's trending online. You have all this racism that's just going crazy right now. Here's what I would say to white people who buy into this stupid ideology. I would say, what do you think is going to help black people in America be better? Telling them that they're stupid or treating them as equals and elevating them and getting them involved in Christianity, getting them involved in learning and whatever, you know, it, because I'm trying to put myself in their shoes because they think they're better than black people. So I'm like, okay, if you think you're better than black people, let's try to help black people improve then.
I don't think they want to help them.
Help them improve to just say, we're better, you suck. Stupid.
They just want to get them out.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, like, let's just say someone is lower IQ than you. That doesn't mean that they're worse.
What good is it to tell them that?
Yeah, again.
Like, why bring that up?
Yeah, but don't we pretty much extenuate every trait? Like, someone's
faster. Why would I ever say to anyone for any reason, you're low IQ and I'm high IQ, I'm inherently smarter than you, you're inherently dumb. Like, when would that ever be an appropriate thing to say to anyone for any reason?
Okay, but wait a minute. I'm not saying like that direct statement, but okay, doesn't the Apostle Paul bring up the Greeks and the barbarians? Is he like classifying people to the wise and to the unwise? Is he classifying groups of people? Like, this group is a little bit smarter than this group? I mean, I'm just saying.
When does he say, hey, the Greeks are a little smarter than the barbarians?
Doesn't he literally say to the Greeks and barbarians and to the wise and the unwise? Isn't he contrasting those two?
I don't think he's making an exact parallel there, no. I mean, I think that's your interpretation, but I don't think that you could say for sure that when he says, oh, I'm a debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and the unwise, I don't think he's saying Greeks are wise and barbarians.
Doesn't
are
he say Greeks seek after wisdom?
He says that the Jews seek a sign, the Greeks seek wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified. He's just saying that the Greeks are interested in intellectual pursuits. The Jews are interested in the supernatural. But I don't know. I don't think that he is saying – I think that that's a little bit of a leap to say that he's classifying Greek people as the smartest people.
I don't think it's a leap. I don't think it's a leap. I think it's just what the text is saying. But
are Greek people the smartest people? Have they ever been the smartest people necessarily?
I'm just saying at that time.
Is their country right now isn't doing very well.
No, I'm just saying at that time, the Apostle Paul is identifying groups of people and saying, hey, this Greek group is the wise group and this barbarian group is the unwise group. And it's not so much like an ethnicity.
I mean, to be clear though, the word barbarian is in that context, you know, of the Greek language 2000 years ago. The word barbarian is anybody who doesn't speak Greek is a barbarian. So it's literally.
Okay, but again, I'm not
everyone else.
Sure. So but like, the barbarians are an uncivilized group of people.
It doesn't really make sense to say that Greek speaking people are the only intelligent people and then everybody yeah. else.
No. Again, because there's always exceptions, but I'm just saying like there's the civilized and the uncivilized.
We're not talking about exceptions. We're talking about the fact that there is major civilization that is not Greek speaking at that time.
That he's classifying barbarian. As barbarian?
Everybody who's not speaking Greek is classified as a barbarian is what I'm trying
okay,
to tell you.
But again, is the Apostle Paul going to literally again.
So most of the white people in Europe were barbarians by that logic. Okay. Because remember, he's on the island of Malta, you know, and people can debate whether it's
you talk about the barbarous people. They don't seem very civilized.
They're white people, though.
It doesn't. I didn't say it was ethnicity. I didn't say it was limited to like only white people are smart and black people.
No. But here's my point.
Like that's the interjection that's confusing this. I'm saying you could look at a group of people and say this group of people is wise and this group of people is unwise. And look,
I think he's just looking at the Greeks and saying these people are super into philosophy and thinking and learning and academics. And so that's, maybe he's making that point. But what I'm saying is that most of the people that would go on to become some of the smartest people, like Germanic people, wouldn't you say that like
okay.
Germans?
Let's just prove this point because I'm sick of arguing this point. The Bible clearly says that the unsaved or the heathen are going to look to the children of Israel and they're going to say, what a wise and understanding people. Because of the fact that they had God's law as their law, and they're going to see the benefits to the wisdom that they have from the Bible. So, like, if we can't classify or objectively notice, like, certain groups of people are smarter than others, then it totally eradicates all the benefits that Christianity
brings
with it.
No, because what you're saying, you just defeated your own point right there.
No,
because
I didn't.
Basically, yes, you did. Because basically. The whole point why people are going to look at them and think that they're smart is because they're worshiping the Lord and following the Bible. Not like, oh, you guys are just really high IQ people over there in Israel. We're low IQ in our country. Because the whole conversation, the whole thing that this is about is I'm saying it makes no sense to say this nationality or this ethnicity, you guys are low IQ, you guys are dumb. We're smarter than you. I'm saying that's a prideful, arrogant thing to say in any context. And that's why we shouldn't focus on that. Even if it's true, it shouldn't be emphasized. And then you're saying, oh, the Bible does that. But does it though when the Bible's saying basically like, oh, you know, people are going to look to you and say, oh, because you guys are Christian. You know, you guys are smart for being Christian. Not like you guys are high IQ. I just think that that's just
yeah. But again, if we look at Muslims and we say, "Hey, you guys are low IQ because you're marrying your first cousins and you have a dumb, screwed up religion," and Christians are having a better IQ because we're not marrying our first cousins and following God's commandments, like that could have a tangible benefit. And I'm not saying
yeah, but
again,
that's different. It's on an different individual to say Arabs level. Are dumb versus Muslims are dumb. That's the distinction that I'm making. I could say Mormons are dumb. Mormons are as white as snow. I can just say Mormons are dumb because Mormonism's dumb. We're all going to get up and say atheists are dumb because the Bible says the fool that said in his heart there is no God. So that's totally different, though, than saying, oh, this nationality is dumb. That's what I'm saying isn't helpful. Do you see the distinction I'm making?
If you have a black kid listening to a podcast where he's hearing, hey, your ethnicity, your ethnic background makes you genetically predisposed to be less intelligent. You know, what bothers me with that is it's going to demoralize them and potentially dissuade them from wanting to acquire wisdom, acquire knowledge.
But why would it do that?
A characteristic that they can't change about themselves.
Because at the end of the day, if someone says, all right, Jonathan, your IQ is 120. It's not 150. Or let's say it's 100. Or let's say it's 95. I don't care what the number is. Why would I not still want to reach my full potential no matter what the number is? I think I should still gain as much wisdom as I possibly can, irregardless of what my, quote, IQ is. But if
because you're forgetting that if somebody tells you you're bad at math, then you're going to spend the rest of your life saying, I don't like math. I'm not good at math. I don't do math. See, let's come back to reality for a second. You're thinking in this idealized thing where everybody's just going to try their best no matter what. False. If you tell someone you're not good at this, you're not predisposed, you're not cut out for this, you're never going to make it as this, people are just going to give up and throw up their hands and quit. If you treat people like they're smart, they'll be smarter. They even did scientific studies where if a teacher got up at the beginning of the class and said, this is really hard what I'm about to teach you, versus said, this is really easy what I'm about to teach you, they taught the same thing the same way. And when they were told, you can do this, it's easy, you're going to do well, they did better. And when they were told, oh, this is really hard, I hope you guys can figure this out, they struggled and did bad. So my point is, you know, even if these things are true, because a lot of people will be like, oh yeah, well, it's true, you know, I'm racist, but it's true or whatever. It's like, you know, well, I don't want to be told that I'm weak. I don't want to be told that I'm dumb. I don't want to be told that I'm this or that or the other because of my race, because it's like, it's just not helpful. You know, that's my point is just, you know, let's just.
Well, I think the messaging is important.
Treat everyone the same and let the cream rise to the top on its own. But you let people be judged on their own merits and treat everyone the same. And let's even if everyone's not the same, we might as well just go into it just assuming that people are the same and let them prove to us that they're smart or let them prove to us that they're dumb. But why not? If I meet somebody, if a guy walks into my church. If a black guy walks into my church, I'm not going to be like, well, statistically, this guy is going to be X and Y and Z, or, you know, or if a white guy walks in, I'm not going to just go through these demographics and stuff. I'm just going to be like, this guy, you know, is just a blank slate and I'm just going to, you know, judge this guy on his merits. I don't think that we should prejudge that person based on what other black people are like or what other white people are like, what other Chinese people are like. That's my point. Okay.
Well, and again, here's prejudice exists no matter what, though, right?
Insurance company is going to charge me more money for being male than female, right? So if I'm an 18-year-old boy,
sure,
then they're going to charge me more than if I'm an 18-year-old girl. Isn't that true?
Yes.
Because I'm and more age. Rich. And if I'm 20, they're going to charge me more than if I'm 40, right?
Right. Age is
what if the insurance company did that with race? And what if the insurance company is like, oh, well, you know, your particular race is involved in more car accidents, so we're going to charge you more because you're this race or whatever. You know what I mean? Like That would never fly. People would get mad about that.
Yeah, but see, here's, wait, there's real racial profiling that's happened in America that was taught to police academies. And at the end of the day, though, I think that there's overlapping in these categories that's a miscategorization that's a tight coupling, right? So you bring up the Somalians that are being mass imported into Minneapolis. It's like, okay, well, the reason why these people are dangerous is not because they have black skin, but because they're coming from Somalia and because they're coming from an uncivilized area and because they have a false religion, they are a dangerous demographic. And so then people start prejudging people. So if you live in Minneapolis and you see black people walking down the street, you maybe have a heightened sense of risk, of danger, of just whatever's going on.
But hold up.
That's not necessarily fair to every black person, but I'm just saying, like, it's not because of their skin color, but again, it's still an identifying marker, right? That's a tight couple.
But let me jump in and say this, because I disagree, because this is what you'll hear white supremacists often say, like, well, if you pull up to a gas station at night, are you going to feel more comfortable if it's a black, if there's a couple of black guys standing there, a couple of white guys standing there? This is what's stupid about that. Is because if I pulled up to a gas station at night and there was a clean cut black guy with his pants pulled up, wearing a belt, looking like a normal classy person, I would not be nervous at all. I wouldn't be thinking about all these crime statistics about black people. If I pulled up and saw white guys sagging their pants, looking like thugs, I would drive to the next gas station. Because look, I'm the type of guy, the Bible says that the prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself. But the wick, you know, the foolish, simple, whatever, I'm quoting it wrong, pass on and are punished. So I'm for foreseeing the evil. If I saw derelict, thug-looking blacks at a gas station, I would drive to the next gas station because I just don't want to be around people like that. I don't want to be mugged or in danger. But I would do the same thing if I saw white people that looked like scary criminals. If I saw scary criminals, I'm going to the next gas station. Whereas I don't think that anybody, if they just saw like a nice black family at the gas station, is going to be like, oh man, these people, you know, have such high crime statistics. And here's the thing. There's a big difference between an American black person and a Somalian immigrant. You know, if I'm in Minnesota and I see an African American person that's clean cut, dressed normal versus some just total uncivilized looking, non-English speaking, so barbaric in that sense, right? This barbaric Somalian Muslim, they're going to stand out like a sore thumb. And I think that I can be upset about a Somalian Muslim heathen coming into our country who's just uncivilized, false religion, doesn't want to assimilate, maybe even can't assimilate very well. But then to turn around and then lump that person in with some black person whose ancestors have been here for like 150 years or something, you know, and they're just born and raised in America, you know, any black person who has their pants pulled up and is wearing a belt and is a classy person, I would not feel any different about that person.
Here's the thing. Wait. I want to agree with what you're saying because I agree with what you said. But here's one problem. And people have been bringing this up, that people have figured this out and that there are some groups, gangs and dangerous groups that have identified this. And so they have one person dress in a very normal, casual manner to try and go over there and seem like the nice person needing help. And then a bunch of people jump them. And again, I'm not trying to say like, hey, racial profiling is how we should live our lives. But sometimes, you know, people have prejudices because of stereotypes and they exist.
Yeah, but has that ever happened to you or anyone that you've ever known in your life?
I'm just saying it's being brought up, number one. And number two, it's being
never happened to me. It's
been constantly said online a lot. And I feel like these narratives are kind of almost creating more racial prejudice than
you know what I think would be more likely situation is that some beautiful white girl is sent up to your car. Hey, I need help. You know what I mean? And then there's some guy ready to
some
jump
pimp
you or whatever.
Yeah.
Some pimp or yeah, exactly.
I've never been approached by attractive women. This never happens.
Kind of like
this is stupid. I would just shoot her. I'm just kidding.
What if I get struck by lightning? You know, what if I get struck by lightning? What if I get eaten by a shark?
I'm not going to swim in the ocean. I think the statistics are not going to be in favor of the comparison, but let's play this clip. I know we've run through the show quite a bit. I just want to play this clip, get some final thoughts here.
I'm saying show me the classy looking black people that are criminals. Because whenever I see these mugshots of like, oh, look at these terrible people, they look like derelicts.
Yeah. Play this clip.
And
play the clip.
You've also said you don't want to live near black people. Let's take a listen to this clip.
I'm a new generation of white person. I'm not living around blacks. Sorry. You know, I want white kids, and I don't want my white kids bringing home black people to marry. It's racial for me. And call me racist. Oh, very Christian of you. I don't give a fuck.
I mean, language warning. Clearer, really, unless you want to say that's another
little late,
but you're basically saying, yeah, I'm a racist, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
You're fine with saying you're a racist?
Totally. I think everybody's racist. I think everybody, if we're being honest, is racist. I think everybody, the only people that aren't racist or pretend not to be are white people to their detriment. Everybody else is racist.
But earlier in the interview, you went, really got aggrieved at the idea that your father was a racist. You wanted to make emphatically sure.
Yeah, because
he's not.
Because my father doesn't share my same views on that.
So he's the exception to the everyone's a racist.
Well, everybody's a little bit racist. You're right. So maybe everybody, the difference is you're attacking my father.
All right, we can pause.
Sounds like Piers kind of got him there.
Really got him on this one. I think that Piers had a lot of bad takes on this interview, honestly. But occasionally he really did kind of hold his feet to the fire on some of these. And I felt like this was kind of a gotcha, but I kind of want to hear your thoughts on this. Ben, did you see this clip before?
No, this is the first time.
So what did you think about that?
Well, I think that Fuentes, again, he's kind of just trying to be inflammatory on purpose. But in terms of like, is everybody racist? To me, the level of racism that someone has is going to be directly correlated to how carnal that they are. And so the reason why people are just totally obsessed with skin color has everything to do with the fact that they just don't think about the world through spiritual lenses. It's all just about white versus black, green versus blue, yellow versus red. These stupid superficial characteristics that in my mind don't matter. So I mean, that's my reaction to it, is I just think that, yeah, carnal people are racist, sure, but that is, I think it evaporates when people get into the Word of God and actually become spiritual, go out soul winning, and start to care about the things of God. That's the way I look at it.
What do you think on this, Pastor Anderson?
Yeah, I mean, I obviously totally disagree with him, because I would have no issue living around black people. I have a problem with thugs, gangbangers, the hip hop culture, but I don't have a problem. I love black people. I have no issue. You know, and when I went to Bible college, I specifically chose the ministry that was the black ministry, where we went into Chicago and we did all of our soul winning and ministry and preaching. And I spent every Saturday and Sunday in South Chicago, where it's 100% black. Like, it's very segregated. Everybody's black. And I got along with black people well. I like black people. I've had no issue with that. But at the same time, I absolutely hate, you know, criminality. I hate violence. I hate, you know, stealing. I hate the hip hop culture. I hate rap music. I don't like the sagging of the pants and the derelict attitude. You know, so, you know, obviously I'm not just sitting here saying, oh, that's all wonderful. No, it's horrible. There's a lot of really bad things about that culture. But at the same time, what I don't think is fair, going back to my insurance analogy from earlier, where I said, hey, should we charge people different car insurance based on their race? How would you feel if you're just this totally like straight-laced, classy black person, and then just because you're black, you're paying more because you're being lumped in with some gangbanger thug that you don't have anything in common with culturally? That's not you. You know what I mean? And so I think that you're right. There are different kinds of people in this world, and we do classify people into categories, but I don't think that they should be classified based on race. You know,
well,
we should categorize people based on religion and based on culture, based on mentality. You know,
I think something to think about in this argument that Fuentes is bringing up, because he's saying he doesn't want to live in a black neighborhood or near black people. And I think the way that you articulated that helps to bring some nuance here. Like, it's not that you're against living in a black neighborhood, but you don't want to live in a neighborhood where it's filled with degeneracy, thugs, criminality. And unfortunately in America, there's probably very few situations where that's even reality. But like, we've been to the Bahamas many times. Many people from our church have visited there. They would think, like, I would love to live here. Like, living in the Bahamas would be a great place to live. And it's a predominantly
black.
Yeah, it's a predominantly black island country. And again, it feels safe. It doesn't feel like inner city Chicago. It doesn't feel like downtown Houston.
But Jamaica?
Yeah.
Never want to live in Jamaica.
No. Like Kingston?
Jamaica,
no.
Jamaica is horrible.
Scary.
I was there. I've never been to Kingston. The only place I've been to was Ocho Rios. And I was like, man, I was like, get me out of here. Like, I did not like it at all. I would love to live in the Bahamas around black people. I would not want to live in Jamaica around black people, because it's the trashy, derelict drug culture that I have a problem with. So unfortunately, the sad thing is that in America, most of your black neighborhoods are going to be these high crime areas filled with drugs and gangs. But it's not that I don't want to live there because they're black. It's that I don't want to live there because of the drugs and the gangs and the violence and the graffiti. And we could go to places in the world where the people are black and where the people are nice people, like the Bahamas or whatever.
Yeah, it's the behavior.
Jamaica is a bad example.
It's the behavior that you're bringing up that you have an issue with. It's not simply just how they look, which would be retarded. And I, as evidenced by the Bahamas, vast majority black, and there's other places as well.
It's a culture issue.
I could think of places in DFW when I was going house shopping where the neighborhood was majority black, but the houses looked good and I could see myself living there. So I don't have to necessarily also point to a foreign land to make this point as well.
Or what about some white trailer trash? What about just this trailer trash, like white people? There could be super derelict white neighborhoods where you'd be scared to live in that. Or what about scary Asian?
I've seen that. I've been to white neighborhood. I've been to the white mobile home soul winning.
Yeah.
Where it was dangerous and there was trash everywhere and there were drugs and things that people would traditionally associate with an inner city black area. So to just make everything about skin color, this is what I was saying earlier, making everything about skin color, it's frustrating, it's carnal, and I think it brings the level of intellect to discussions down and oversimplifies things.
Well, see, I think what we're trying to do, though, is we're trying to realize it's not a skin color issue. It's a spiritual Christian issue. And the reality is that, unfortunately, because of the way Christianity has spread itself throughout the world, that a lot of times these skin colors have a correlation to culture and Christianity. And so for a lot of people, you know, you import people from Africa, maybe they do have a different culture and religion. You import people from India, they have a different culture, they have a different religion. You bring people from different parts of the world and they have these different tight couplings. And so oversimplification by these people being, you know, want to be cool Nazis or something, they don't understand it's not really a skin color issue. And so here's the problem. They're not going to solve the problem. Because if you just eradicate people based on skin color, that doesn't end up benefiting America or necessarily solve the problem. Because arguably there's plenty of terrible people in America that are white. Some of the worst people in America are white.
Hillary Clinton.
Most of our leftists and Democrats are white. So,
well, look at the liberal white women that people talk so much about. It's the liberal white women that have like the worst takes on everything.
Yeah.
And they're white, you know? And so I remember when I first got married, I was looking at different apartment complexes, and this one apartment complex, you know, like the price was right, and it was a totally Asian neighborhood. There weren't any black people. It was all Asian, but it seemed scary. Because it seemed like there was some gang activity and whatever. And I'm just like, I don't want to live here. you know, and I ended up moving into an apartment that actually the apartment that I did move into, because I was poor when I was first starting out and my wife and I got married, we couldn't afford much. And so we were in an apartment complex that actually, you know, had a bunch of black people living in it. Like our next door neighbor right above us is black. There are a bunch of black people, but like it had a good vibe. You know, it didn't feel scary, whereas the Asian apartment down the street was like super scary. But I guarantee you there are other places where it's, you know, it's different. So it's just,
well, again, let's isolate the skin issue, because people want to say, oh, America would be so great if it was white. Okay, well, let's go back to the 1400s. And I know according to Joe Jones, it was a happy time for Christianity. It was such a great time for Christianity in the 1400s. But do you really want to go back to Europe, 1400s, 1500s? It's all white people. But, you know, as a Bible-believing Christian, you would hate being in that period in time. You would hate being, you would have no freedom. You'd have, you're coming out of the Dark Ages, arguably. I mean, just let's go to the Dark Ages. Again, another all white period of time in Europe. Oh man, it's so great. Hey, lots of white people in Scandinavian countries and northern parts of Europe were pagan, Vikings. You know, Bible believing Christians don't want to live in that part.
I mean, the Vikings are gross. Like, they're not bathing. They're like all washing their mouths out with the same, like, you know, spit bucket and everything. And they had all these gross practices. Like there's all kinds of literature on that, you know, of what that culture was like. And it had some problems because it's a pagan, godless, violent culture. You know, I mean,
I'm just trying to say that just because you're surrounded by white people doesn't mean you're going to be better off. There's been plenty of times throughout history where being surrounded by white people could be a nightmare. And so, you know, at the end of the day, it's Christianity that causes people to be blessed.
But
it's Christianity that causes people to have safety.
Instead of saying, I don't want to live around blacks, I don't want to live around black people, why not just say, like, I don't want to live in a high crime area. I don't want to live around gangs. I don't want to live where there's graffiti. I don't want to live in a trashy area. Because you know what's just as irritating as the black thugs that are out there? How about all the white homeless people? Because you know what? I travel around Phoenix and homelessness is epidemic, and these are derelicts refusing to work. They're alcoholics. They're drug addicts. And guess what? They're 99% white, the ones that I see. Now, I'm not saying that that's an accurate statistic or something. I'm just telling you my perception. When I drive to church, I drive down Chandler Boulevard, there's a white lady standing on the corner every time. And if it's not her, it's this other white guy. If it's not him, it's this other white guy. Because I know all the bums, because you see them. You drive the same routes, see the same bums every day. And look, we do have a black homeless guy that hangs around in our church parking lot right now. But you know what? There's tons of white homeless people in Chandler, Ahwatukee, Tempe. So these are, you know, white areas or whatever, suburbia. And there's so many derelict white homeless people. Well, you know what? I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable playing with my kids at the park when there's a whole bunch of like white homeless people taking over the park. And 25% of them statistically are sex offenders too.
Pastor Anderson dislikes homeless people so much. Not only does he not want to live near them, he'll drag them miles away if he has to.
This is true.
I will drag you miles away from here.
I'm just saying, yeah, there are black and Hispanic homeless people, but is it just me or are most of the homeless people that we see white? Maybe just because
I think it's gone up. It's probably disproportionate white. I think atheists are disproportionate white. I think leftists and Democrats, I don't know, actually. I guess there's a lot of black Democrats, but at least in political power, it seems like there's probably a disproportionate number of Democrats that are white politicians. And so, you know, I think that whites definitely have their issues too. They have their problems. In the chat, I've seen a lot of people bring this up. Just the idea of like the Bible kind of downplays wisdom and intellect because it causes you to be prideful. And yeah, yep. just even if you do, let's just say objectively a group of people was smarter, that doesn't necessarily make them better off. And that's a point I tried to make earlier in the show, but obviously being smarter could cause you to be very prideful. It could cause you to not want to get saved. God makes wise the simple. So obviously, no matter where you start out, God could use somebody and give them a lot of wisdom and a lot of knowledge from reading the Bible. So I don't want the show to seem like we're disparaging any group of people. To me, it's more about like highlighting strengths. You know, when it comes to Mario Kart and stuff, it's just some are faster, some have more maneuvering. Everybody has different strengths and weaknesses. And I think that...
Well, wouldn't you say that black people are more receptive to the gospel in general?
I mean, absolutely.
Look, why did I choose the black ministry when I was in Bible college? Because black people are receptive. I love witnessing to black people because they're receptive. Why do we love to go to the Bahamas? Why do we love to go soul winning in Botswana or these places? Because black people are receptive. I mean, when I first moved to Phoenix and I started Faithful Word Baptist Church and I'm knocking doors, trying to reach people with the gospel, I asked somebody, where's the black neighborhood? Because like I wanted to go soul winning in the black neighborhood. And they said, well, there really isn't a black neighborhood because it's everybody's just mixed here. Whereas in Chicago, it's very segregated. Yeah. But you know what? Black people are more receptive. So guess what? You're going to have a bunch of white supremacists bragging about how smart they are, burning in hell for all eternity, like Nick Fuentes is going to burn in hell, freaking Roman Catholic. And then you're going to have a bunch of just black people that are, you know, these low IQ, according to him or whatever, that are actually going to be in heaven, and they have more wisdom than him. Because now they're saved, they're indwelled by the Holy Spirit, they're reading the Bible, you know, they're going to be way smarter and have way better takes about everything than Nick Fuentes and his stupid takes, because he's not saved. So he's a fool because yes. He's not saved. A saved black man is going to be smarter than Infinitely. Nick Fuentes any day of the week. And again, I'm not saying that black people are inherently lower IQ, because they're not. Because I've known black people that were way smarter than I am. I've seen black people go very far academically and be super smart, you know, despite whatever statistics or averages or whatever. That's why it's not fair, because, you know, humans are all different, and there's going
to
be
one. And again, to your point, there's not really even a thing as like all black, all white anyway. So we just use these categories as stupid labels. But I do want to land the plane. I appreciate our crew for allowing us to have lots of different clips and videos and images. Again, I want to have this conversation. I know it's a little bit uncomfortable conversation, you know, just talk about some of these topics, because we don't want anybody to feel like we're attacking them or think negatively about them. But at the end of the day, like, there are differences in humanity. It doesn't matter. Whoever you are, you should always try to get wisdom. And that's through getting saved, reading the Bible. You should try to learn and grow. I like Pastor Nunes' attitude. Hey, work on your weaknesses when you can. But at the same time, if you have a strength in a certain part of your area, there's no problem in leaning into that and using the God-given talents that he's given to you. If you are someone that's really smart and has a lot of opportunity, you need to use that for the kingdom of God. You know, travel the world, preach the gospel, try to reach a lot of people. If he's giving you a lot of money, you know, if he's giving you 10 talents, you need to use those 10 talents to reach people with the gospel. I don't think there's anything wrong personally with identifying, hey, this is a 10-talent person, a 5-talent person. I think that sometimes we as Americans need to recognize we have a lot of privilege. We've been given a lot of opportunity to travel the world, given a lot of intelligence, wisdom, money. We should use that to our ability to go to Africa, to go to Caribbean, go to Mexico, go to these other places that are less civilized, and give them the gospel and try to get people saved. It's not about a superiority complex. It's about, hey, recognizing you've been given a lot of opportunity here. Use that to your full potential. But I want to go around Robin and give you guys a last chance to comment on anything you want to say. Ben, is there anything you wanted to say about the show tonight, or your final thoughts here?
Yeah, you brought in earlier that different religions are coupled with different geographies and ethnicities a lot of the time. And so when they're being imported in, they often bring those religions and they're bringing that culture with them. But the reason why the places that they're coming from are often total hell holes and just, you know, places that nobody would ever want to go to, especially Muslim countries, Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, etc. Hell, I'll throw Lebanon into the mix as well. It's because of the religion. You know, the Bible says the wicked shall be turned into hell, and all the nations that forget God. That's why those places are in that state today. And it's not because, like, oh, they're just Arab or something. It's because of what their ethnicity is coupled with, which is Islam, one of the most idiotic, garbage, false religions on the face of the planet. And so you made that point. I heard, I think, Pastor Anderson talk about that as well, and I just wanted to hammer that home as we end the show tonight. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Pastor Anderson, any final thoughts you want to share?
Yeah, I just, you know, I appreciate you having me on, and I know that you and I don't see exactly eye to eye on these things, but I think in general, at the end of the day, we both love Christ, we both love the Bible, we both love lost souls, and we both love people, red, yellow, black, and white. Neither of us is racist or white supremacist or anything like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just thinking about how, you know, which country has the highest average IQ? Oh, it's Japan, right? Because I looked it up and it was Japan. Average is like 106 or something. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, Japan, what about just how evil Japan has been throughout history? I mean, Japan did so many evil things, like leading up to World War II and during World War II, just committing all these horrible atrocities. And then today, you know, Japan has all kinds of problems with just men being weak and effeminate, and like they can't even approach girls to ask them out. They're not even getting married. They're not even having kids. They're committing suicide. It's like, look, and I know you agree with me on this, Pastor Shelley, every nationality has its pros and cons, its strengths and weaknesses, you know, like you said with your Mario Kart illustration. And so there's more to life than IQ. High IQ, low IQ, that doesn't make or break you. That doesn't determine who you are. And you know what? I consider myself a very educated person. I am an intellectual by nature, but I don't think that I have a high IQ. I've never really been tested on my IQ, but if I had to guess, I would say that my IQ is probably pretty average, you know, maybe slightly above average, but I've met a lot of people that were a lot smarter than me and picked things up way faster than me. But the reason that I'm educated is just because I put a lot of work into studying, you know? And so who cares about stupid IQ? You know, at the end of the day, if you're in some death-worshipping Buddhist cult and you have a high IQ, it's not really going to help when you're burning in hell. It doesn't really help when you're committing atrocities and mutilating people and doing all these things. So at the end of the day, you know, the thing that matters is not our skin color. It's not our ethnicity. It is, are we saved? Do we love the Lord? You know, are we working hard? Are we following Christ? Are we following the Bible? And you know what? I just have way more in common with saved Christians who are red, yellow, black, and white than white people who don't know Christ. You know, that's who I'm not going to have any common ground with, because what part hath Christ with Belial? What part hath he that believeth with an infidel? What fellowship has light with darkness? That's the dichotomy that we need to focus on. And I think it's unfortunate that we're even having this broadcast, but I understand why you want to have this broadcast. And I agreed to come on the broadcast because I know this is a huge issue right now. Everybody's talking about it. And so we need, you know, we're bringing the Baptist bias to this conversation. So I, you know, I understand, but honestly, I'm just going to be honest. It's not my favorite conversation. I don't like it. I don't think it's profitable, but I feel like we have to have this conversation simply because the Nick Fuenteses are out there with all their dumb crap. And so it needs to be like countered with some reasonable conversation. Anyway, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. Enjoyed it.
I want to read some comments and then I want to give some final thoughts here. Thanks to our audience. We actually were smashing other podcasts that were live, but for some reason Rumble just won't show or put us on the front page, even though we're just smashing other people's view counts. But anyways, we got WRLATX says, awesome discussion. Greatly appreciate it, pastors. Always Baptist says, thank you, Pastor Shelley, Pastor Anderson, and Brother Ben. Great discussion. Andrew Gwinnan says, the worst race in America will always be the 2001 Daytona 500.
Do you know why?
Adela Lyle says, Fuentes is a grifter fool. Baptist Christian says the internet is the greatest equalizer for fools. Baptist Christian says God can take the most foolish, uneducated person and make them the wisest, most intelligent person once they follow Christ. Hey, I like that. comment. Adela says, car insurance is different in New South Wales depending on what town you live in and its high crime count. That's pretty interesting. Hey, JRoy88, good point, Brother Ben. Hey, you made a good point at some point, so that's a shout-out to Brother Ben.
Just one, but I'll take it.
Exactly.
Do you know why the 2001 NASCAR was the worst?
I don't know why it was 2001, do you?
Oh, well, you're from Texas. I figured you knew about NASCAR.
I feel like all NASCAR is low IQ, so I personally hate NASCAR completely. Although some people would say I have my favorite phrase that came from it, let's go Brandon.
Let's go, so, yeah.
There you go. Sorry for the Fuentes language this evening for any of our viewers. Someone says, Kay River says, that's me, Pastor Shelley. My parents are lighter skinned, but I'm a little bit darker. So someone in the chat says, hey, they're darker than both of their parents. Honestly, there was a lot of good discussion, a lot of good questions in there. Thanks to everybody who participated in the show. I just want to give my few thoughts on why I had the show. I'm not so black-pilled on it, but number one, I want to have the show because I want people to realize, like, race mixing is not a problem. It's not a sin. It's not a bad thing. And in fact, in some cases, it's yielded some of the greatest genetic results that we've ever seen. I mean, some of the greatest athletes are obviously coming from mixed race situations. And so I don't want people to think like they're inferior or there's something wrong or your kids are going to be screwed up. You know, a lot of people are really down on interracial marriage. I've had people say, hey, I like everything about your church except for you guys permit interracial marriage. And you know, that's just a stupid low IQ viewpoint. I think it's a bad idea. You know, most of America has a lot of mixing. Even if it was quote all white, it was coming from all kinds of different parts of Europe. And I think that was a good thing. You know, really what makes people great, I believe, is the Bible and Christianity. And I think we need to understand that viewpoint. You know, if America's immigration policy was allowing people to come from all over the world, but solely based on the fact that they had Christianity as the main force as to why they were coming, they wanted to assimilate to our culture and assimilate to the religion of Christianity, I think that would be a positive thing. I think we could import the Indians and the Africans and the South Americans and the Asians and whoever, and it wouldn't have any problem. The problem is importing a lot of these people, especially they don't want to assimilate, they don't want to have the same culture, or the same language, or the same religion, and that causes major issues. But, you know, if you're out there, and I was hoping this would also be another part of the show, is that maybe you feel like you don't have a certain strength in your life. I think that God gives us a balance. And so maybe you're not as tall as you wanted to be. Maybe you don't have, you know, certain athleticism that you wanted or vice versa. I think that we all are special, and I think that God has given us different strengths and weaknesses. And so you should focus in on what God has given you and be thankful for the strengths that you have. If there's certain weaknesses you want to work on, okay. But, you know, I grew up short my entire life, and I always thought it was like a really negative thing, and I was really disappointed. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're fearfully, you know, and wonderfully made, and I think that there's going to be trade-offs and that I can still lean into the strengths that God has given me. And I think God did give me a lot of good strengths. And no matter who you are, no matter where you're at, I think God blesses us with unique characteristics, unique qualities, unique traits. And we should be appreciative of who we are. We should fully embrace who we are. We shouldn't look down on other people as thinking that they're worse. I don't believe in a master race. There's no such thing. I think everybody has strengths and weaknesses, and we should appreciate everybody's strengths and weaknesses, whatever they are, and that we should all, really at the end of the day, get the Baptist bias. So everybody out there has got a race. Everybody's got a different, you know, background, but we can all get the Baptist bias.